This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hear shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard. You won't do to do for love. You tried everything, but you don't give up.
What I would not do. My friends wonder what is wrong with me. Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, back inside the mothership, the Vintage Vault, baby. And my PSC, Scott Criscola, alongside with me, riding tight on the sidecar. How you doing, baby?
What's up, Mr. Polka Dot, the Midnight Rider?
All right, JR. Welcome, Place Be Nation, to episode 410 of The Mothership. And I have to say, since JR, the Cal Ripken-esque streak is broken at 408 episodes, I have to say you did a phenomenal job last week with episode 409 and Mr. Dixon. That was a tremendous interview. So if anybody has not checked it out yet, please do. It is exceptional. Exceptional interview. Great job.
Yeah, James is awesome. Talked all about his Titan Sinking, Shattered, and Screwed series. His three books. His newest one out, of course, covers 97 and into 98. Talked mm-hmm. a little bit of mid-90s wrestling. Talked to Observer Hall of Fame, you know, Big Daddy, of course. So a lot going on. It was a good interview. He was a really cool guy, and he'll be back with us at some point in the future, I'm sure, for more fun. So be sure to check that out. And I figured since you missed that one, it didn't really matter anymore. I almost just recorded this last night without you. But I figured, you know, I don't want to go too many in a row now and start a new streak. So, you know, I thought that just kind of gave me the autonomy to do what I want at that point.
No. But that's okay.
Welcome back.
It was a good episode. 409 was very good.
Yeah.
Did you have an exceptional weekend? You met out on the Place to Be Nation retreats, kind of like our Camp David out in Pennsylvania this weekend.
Yeah, it was good. It was, Brad and I met deep into the night inside the hotel lobby. Of course, it was a family vacation, but we had worked in some business as well, business meeting. You know, it's funny because we went out I went to Sesame Place, so with my family, but of course, our owner of the site lives in the vicinity, so hung out with him a few times, and my wife and I went out with him and his wife for dinner the first night, and I kind of jokingly said, like, oh, we need to talk business and have a business meeting, you know, we'll have some beers. And, like, they took it all serious. Like, oh, you know, what business are you talking? You know, like, kind of. They thought we were insane, first of all. But I was, like, kidding. I just meant, like, I want to hang out with Brad and have some beers while you guys all sleep. But it was it ended up being a pretty fruitful business meeting, actually, at the end of the day. Got to watch all the – there was a big softball tournament going on in town. So we got to watch that, all the lady softball players walk in and out of the hotel while we were meeting and knocking back some Yuengling lights. So courtesy of Mr. Bradley on that. So, no, it was a good time. The park was a lot of fun, too. Kids loved it. Had a really good time. And that's that.
Exceptional.
How about you?
Not bad. Wrapping up, of course, the reason I was not here last Monday was, of course, the publicized Sword and Shield Golf Classic. And I thank everyone at Place Me Nation for their donations. It was a one nice day. Had 136 people, 95 golfers. The weather was very nice, and we made a lot of money for our charities. So I thank everyone.
95
for that.
Golfers, 40 onlookers, and one creep, D'Amato.
Yes, yes, that's right. We need to add a little sauciness to the party. Yeah. But no, I did this. Sold raffle tickets, probably so people would run away and get away. here, buy these tickets, or I'll stalk your daughter.
Did he have a kissing booth set up?
Yeah. Buy these tickets, or I'll stalk your daughter. No, it was.
Put it in your 19th hole.
Any event, it was an exceptional event, and I thank everyone who donated. Of course, we'll be doing it again next year. But yeah, so I relaxed all this whole week, and
I almost surprised you because we drove by your exit right around your little mass time there, and
yeah,
if I didn't have a sleeping child and another ornery one that was kept saying she had to pee, I may have stopped into the old church and saw everyone in the regalia and said hi, but it was just not meant to be. And of course, you know, as always in Connecticut, we had an accident later on.
Oh,
so
what a shock.
That slowed us up. So, worked out that we didn't. But it was close. We almost pulled it off. If it was me flying solo, I would have been there. But.
Oh, it would have been nice to see you. But I know you did stop at the rest area in Fairfield, and a lot of miscreants and vagabonds, even for Fairfield County rest areas. Mm-hmm. But good you got home okay. What was that, about 4 hours, 4.5, 3:45?
Yeah, well, if you factor in the lunch break, it was around 5 hours.
Okay.
When you factor in the – I mean, it was almost an hour at the rest stop. So.
Right. Yeah. So it's good that you had a fine weekend, and it's good to be back on the mothership, baby. And yeah, we are back in the big steel box for a show that probably another one of those ones. And I think almost every pay per view in 2006, we're going to look at it and go, I don't know, it didn't seem that bad. And then you watch it and you go, this really was bad. So let's see if the show is equal to that task. Although One Night Stand was very good, so I can't argue with that one.
Hey! Hey, what? What's going on here is that I am Glenn Butler, and I am here to seek vengeance from my friend Stephen Graham, because you guys, you did ECW last week or the week before. You're stomping on our territory. Justin, you keep bad-mouthing him. You selected him randomly out of everyone on this freaking site, and I am here as a Stephen Graham justice warrior.
Mm, that sounds about the worst possible occupation you could hold. But Glenn Butler...
You're fired.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. See you later.
See you later.
Terminated your contract. I'm gonna rehire you though, like Shane McMahon in 1998 for Steve Austin. You're here, rudely interrupted, burst into the studio, and all of a sudden the studio has become a rampant open door. You know, for anyone can just join the show apparently. But you're here. You got nowhere else to be. Do you want to stay and talk vengeance?
Ooh. Yeah. I'll stay with you. I just needed to get that off my chest.
Good. I hope it's the last time we ever have to talk about Stephen Graham on the show. Is that okay?
We'll see.
Okay.
Well, the show will probably get more clicks anyway. Oh, no.
That's rough.
Tonight.
Man, you're mean.
Inside the big steel box, we bring you, as Mr. Butler mentioned, Vengeance 2006. Post One Night Stand, and now ECW bleeds over to the big time. Because as we talked about in the last vault, JR, the show, the new ECW show, made its debut that Tuesday.
Sure did.
After One Night Stand.
They said, see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday. And now ECW goes into the big time, the big building. So here we go. June 25th, 2006. Live. From the very strange name for a building, the Charlotte Bobcats Arena, like it's fake, in Shakalaki, Charlotte, North Carolina. Of course, JR, not the beloved Charlotte Coliseum that your beloved Hornets always played in. This is a different building. It's of course not named that now because they're not the Bobcats anymore. But give us a little history of this newfangled building.
Fangled newly it was, because it opened in October 21st, 2005, so pretty new.
Yeah.
Of course. When did the Bobcats start? When did they come back?
2000.
It was right around here, right?
Yeah. That's why it was named. And they got blacked out. I read the whole thing today. They got blacked out locally, and they needed a new sponsor, which is what they got eventually. But it was a whole big mess. And the city was upset because the Charlotte Coliseum, the old Beehive, if you remember, was only like 13 years old.
Right.
But
the whole history of the pro basketball team in that city is really messed up between what George Shinn did to the Hornets and then, yes, building, you know, basically killing them off and then complaining that no one came to the games and then building a new arena when they didn't really need one. And then the disaster that was the Bobcat and Michael Jordan, and now it's back to be the Hornets. Big old mess, but the
need
Hornets.
Need a 30 for 30 on the old school Hornets. What do you think? Perfect topic.
I think I'd probably watch that.
Perfect topic.
The Bobcats / Hornets have been there since 2005. The Charlotte Checkers of the ECHL from 05 to 10. The Charlotte Sting of the WNBA 2006. And the Charlotte Checkers of the AHL for five years, 2010 to 2015.
Yes. Okay. Your attendance, only 6,800. And I mean, I tell you, I mean, it seats like, what, 15, 16,000, I think. I think it actually
seats. Pro wrestling, 20,200 max.
Yeah, I mean, does the stage really eat up 14,000 seats?
No,
I mean,
it's a tiny crowd.
Yeah, that's
crazy. It would have been better off running the Bojangles Coliseum.
That's right. Mr. Bojangles.
That is originally the Charlotte Coliseum.
That's right. Your fiery.
Or just find a Golden Corral.
Yes. The quality of the food's probably the same. Your buy rate, Bojangles. 0.84, which actually isn't that bad. And your announcers at ringside, good old JR Jim Ross and Jared the King Lawler, because as we know and we talked about on the last show, Mr. Styles is doing the purple brand or orange brand or whatever color the brand, the ECW brand was. All right, because he tweeted it out, and we don't want to forget, let us have our Sutton report.
They'll be making shirts about this one day that say never forget, which is Sutton's shadowy image and the facts on the back.
Yes.
Either of you remember the song?
Absolutely not. I remember seeing it today, but I knew it was a song that like I wouldn't remember more than an hour.
Glenn?
Victim, I think.
Yes, Victim was the name. Bye.
I got nothing.
18 Visions.
Okay. We'll 18 Visions, no hits.
Yeah, I think I had about 18 Visions during the show.
All right, WWE champion in day 14 of his reign, still Rob Van Dam. ECW champion Rob Van Dam was awarded the title on 613 episode of ECW, so he's 12 days in. Intercontinental champion, back to being Shelton Benjamin, defeated Rob Van Dam, was all over the place in this couple 6 weeks here.
Yes.
On the 515 Raw from Texas Tech in a 3-on-2 Texas Tornado handicap match. Mm-hmm. World Tag Team champions, the Spirit Squad, remain with the gold 83 days into their reign. Mickie James still reigning from WrestleMania 84 days into her reign. We are 682 episodes into Raw, of course, just two into ECW, 414 episodes of Heat. Wrestling deaths, probably one neither of you will ever get. One half of the inaugural tag team champions for the WWF, Crazy Luke Graham, died at age 66.
And I was going to say Tarzan Tyler, the guy that I actually do remember. But that's who we team with. Oh, it's a bummer.
And we had two releases. Any guesses? One guy.
Joey Mercury?
Nope, not Mercury actually yet. I think he was in rehab still. One of them was pretty active. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time we saw him on pay-per-view, though. I guess late 05. He had just come back in late 05. Another guy is never on TV.
Was he a Raw guy or a SmackDown guy?
I don't even know. It was Goldust. He was released after missing a Raw event while attending to family problems in court without informing WWE officials. Out of his 44 matches, 8-10-0. Of course, remember, he came back once Dusty Rhodes regained some power in the booking committee. Another run, short-lived. But he'll be back like he always is. And then Johnny Parisi, released on 6/29, gave his release because he was only on Heat. He won in 14 on TV.
He was smart to leave.
Oh, jeez.
He was smart to leave.
Yeah, I had absolutely no memory of Goldust's run at this time.
It was brief. So he came back with the Vader stuff at the end of the year. And then I don't even know what he did on TV. He might not even really been on much. I mean, he hasn't been on any pay-per-views I get think of. Maybe the Rumble? Was he even in the Rumble? I don't think he was even there.
No.
I don't think he did much at all, Glenn. And Parisi, I don't know. He's on Heat.
Yes, and not very good either.
Some news from around the wrestling world. ECW, we had talked about this, didn't go live on 6/13. Was due to the fact Sci-Fi was uneasy with the language because of what had happened at One Night Stand with the crowd. First show of ECW's cable rating was 2.7. Days later, talent realized the show stunk, and Vince McMahon admitted the show was a failure, but never made it known. The second show of the new ECW drew the lowest first-hour segment, which featured Edge and John Cena. On 6/20, it was accepted that Justin Credle will become a major player in ECW down the line, before possible formation of a new Impact Players on the horizon. On 6/24, it was reported that Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon are working in offices right next to each other. On 6/25, a fight erupted in the crowd during the main event of an ECW house show, Kurt Angle versus Rob Van Dam, between 10 fans over someone who was one of them was a pro John Cena fan. So, Glenn, was that you? Was this in,
I can neither confirm nor deny. I just got to say, I bet that Cena fan got a couple licks in.
I'm sure he did, and I'm guessing he probably won in the end. That's my guess.
You know, never give up, man.
Never give up. Hustle.
Loyalty.
Respect.
Yes. That was great. It's like beautiful. The Raws with the We're Alive, whatever the hell, Uncooked, Uncensored.
Yes.
Remember that throughout the night. Now, at 6/27, it was reported Vince McMahon has taken full control of ECW for Paul Heyman. So there you go, 2 weeks in. And one heat match, Vengeance Dark match, actually. Val Venus defeated Rhea Conway.
Rhymes with penis. Conway rhymes with penis.
Yes, it does.
Ryan's a penis and is a penis now. Continuing the scoreboard, this is North Carolina's 7th pay-per-view, 3rd in the city of Charlotte. Glenny Bun, do you remember the last time we were in the state of North Carolina for pay-per-view?
Oh, I'm terrible on the cities.
What do you think, JR?
It was. I mainly remember this, I believe, because it was the day I met the Big Show outside the arena in the airport, and that was Judgment Day 03.
Correct.
There you go.
Judgment Day 2003 was the last time. So it's a little over 3 years since we've been in the state of North Carolina for pay-per-view. All right. Now, for all of the songs and lengthy ballads and non sequiturs that you played.
Backfiring caddies.
Exactly. And angry Brad Woodling memos. It is not my night.
You know, he gave me guff in the hotel lobby. About the montages.
Of course he did.
And you can't let it go.
But
dude needs to watch Frozen.
But tonight is not my night. I know there'll be songs later. Tonight is your night.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Feels like just yesterday we were watching them fight meat.
That's right. The day has come. Glenn, you're here for a very special, even though you were not supposed to be here, you are here for a very special occasion because it is the end of the line for my PIC's beloved bromance.
Shall it's a I read tragic it? Day, gentlemen. Tragic day.
I'll read. He might be a little emotional because I don't know if he has it in front of him. I want to ask for his record. So, after an illustrious career.
I have it in front of me. Maybe Glenn can guess, though.
Glenn can guess. All right. After an illustrious career, this is Kurt Angle's final WWE pay-per-view appearance. After the show, Angle sporadically appeared on ECW TV and was set to challenge for the ECW title at SummerSlam. However, things were quickly spiraling out of control backstage as Angle's mental and physical health was becoming a major concern, as you could clearly see on TV. There were even rumors out there that many backstage in WWE had him on death watch due to his constant pain and painkiller addiction. On August 25th, Angle was officially released from WWE, something that seemed impossible to think about earlier in the year. Angle has since claimed that he asked for a release because he had requested time off to heal in addition to a lighter schedule and was refused. There were also rumors that WWE wanted him to go into rehab, and he refused. Regardless, many pundits believed it would only be a matter of months before Angle perhaps went the way of his friend Eddie Guerrero if he didn't slow down and get his life in order. In early 2007, he was named in a steroid ring report by Sports Illustrated as one of a number of wrestlers that have been receiving illegal steroids. It was also revealed that Angle had failed a wellness exam at some point. On September 24th of that year, TNA announced that they had signed Kurt Angle. Many insiders and fans were surprised that Angle would jump ship and also looked at TNA as a callous promotion for taking advantage of a wrestler with the rumored issues that he'd been suffering from. Those initial concerns were eventually eradicated. It seemed the softer schedule helped him out. And he is there, he's been there, well, he's not there now, but as recent as last year. So he was there for almost 9 years. Glenny Bunn, What was Kurt Angle's, I'll give you the number of matches, Kurt Angle's final WWE pay-per-view record? 74 matches. Final record.
Oh, Jesus. 74.
Yep.
I'm going to go with 50 and 24.
Wow. JR, impressive, but incorrect. 37 and 37.
What?
Yep, 3-5 at the Rumble, 3-5 at WrestleMania, 6-1 at King of the Ring, 5-1 at SummerSlam, 3-4 at Survivor Series, 17-21 at the secondaries. His best year was, of course, one of our favorite years, 2003. He was 5-2. So a 500 worker in pay-per-view history. All right, JR, the floor is yours.
That's all I got to say. So the match itself came about on the 6/12 Raw when Randy Orton issued a rematch challenge to Kurt Angle looking for revenge from his loss the night before. On the 6/20 ECW, Angle teamed with Rob Van Dam to defeat Orton and Edge in a tag match. Of course, this is the rematch from 1/8 Stanley. Like we mentioned, a much different environment for these guys. Interesting spot because Orton's kind of reestablished. Can he take another loss, though? After Angle went over him back in the Manhattan Center. Angle still very over and in machine monster mode. Orton stalls a bit and forces Angle to stew. Angle grabs a hold and wrestles Orton to the mat and grinds him just like he did at One Night Stand. Orton blocks a German off their apron. Angle gets one down on the floor instead, which was a really nasty bump. Angle keeps utilizing suplexes and mounting Orton, slapping around to frustrate him. Orton comes back with a dropkick and starts laying in some strikes to keep Angle on the mat. Angle breaks a chin lock with a Samoan drop. Orton's able to grab a chin lock and slow things down. Orton cuts off Angle with a clothesline and sucks through his offense. Angle catches Orton on top with a belly-to-belly sprint throw. Orton recovers with an inverted backbreaker for near fall. Angle comes back with 8 Germans. Orton rolls out to the floor, and he is just out of it after that flurry right there. Angle follows out as the crowd cheers him on and pitches Orton back in. Angle gets an angle slam and the ankle lock, but Orton kicks out and shoves Angle into the exposed turnbuckle. Angle walks into an RKO off of that for the Orton win. I thought it made a lot of sense to even the series on the Raw pay-per-view. Orton really needed the win more than Angle. Angle's already been established. We know he's a top guy at ECW. The match was good. I thought it was about the same as One Night Stand. It's just that the crowd heat was different, and then we get the big German spot as well. Orton's finally regaining some momentum that he had lost due to the injury coming out of Mania. Final, of course, Kurt Angle pay-per-view appearance goes out with a loss, but a very iconic career. Like you mentioned, you know, obviously had his issues. He was being prepared to be a top guy in ECW when everything kind of fell apart. And, you know, at the time, I was sad to see him leave, but I wanted to see him be healthy. I wanted him, and I remember being real mad when he went to TNA. And that TNA, you know, it's kind of fueled in those comments, in the fun fact you read, that, you know, TNA at the time seemed like they were enabling him. Like, this is a guy that was rumored to be in really bad shape, and here they are signing him to a deal and, you know, maybe putting him on the faster track to his grave. That's what it felt like at that time, if you believed all the rumors and stories. But always one of my favorites throughout the whole run, of course. You know, tons of great matches, whether you're into his style or not. You know, he always brought it. He always, you know, every match, he worked his ass off. You can't say otherwise. There was no, you know, very few matches, if any, where he ever went out there and dogged it. Wherever he laid back, I don't care if it was a TV match, a house show match, you know, wherever it was, he always gave it his all. Now, that might have been for better or worse. Maybe there were times where he didn't need to be going all out and sprinting and diving off the ropes and, you know, breaking out his full arsenal, but he always did because he always wanted to put on that show. And, you know, he was a guy that adapted really quickly to the pro game, a phenomenon at the time, a phenom, you know, a guy that you didn't know what to expect at first, and then immediately took off on the mic. His year 2000 was amazing for a guy that had only been in the business for a few months. So, you know, one of the few guys. I don't have a ton of wrestling shirts, a decent amount, but, he, you know, him I had like 5 or 6 alone of. So definitely my favorite during the Attitude Era, or the waning years of the Attitude Era, I should say, 2001 and 02. A guy that's always been one of my favorites, and maybe he'll be back someday. You never know. So, Glenn, you want start us off, talk about the match, and then, you know, any thoughts you had on him leaving?
Sure. Well, the match was very much both of these guys playing their characters in the ways that they had been established. Orton is doing his stalling. Angle is doing his mat work that he had transitioned into doing a little more of in ECW to try to emphasize that aspect of it over some of the more hardcore stuff, which would have really put him on the fast track at this point, probably. I have a really hard time with Orton, especially in this era, kind of connecting to his matches, because even though he is playing his character and that character is a douchebag and he's, you know, portraying that very well because he is apparently naturally unlikable, it still is hard for me to really get into it as much as I always kind of liked Angle. And I think the main legacy that Angle leaves is that you can look back at the shows that he was on and very, very seldom was the time when he was not one of the best performers on that show or didn't have one of the better matches on the show. He was very consistent in that regard. But at the same time, you could tell that he was kind of declining personally over the course of 06. I mean, you guys have talked about it. Scott, you mentioned that WWE had him on the death watch. I remember fans had him on the death watch for a long time. And this is one of the first examples, I think, of someone going to TNA just because they didn't have a wellness policy, which would happen with two more high-profile people. And thankfully, all three of them seem to have, you know, made it through and cleaned up. So that much is good. But as far as this match goes, Orton did need the win a little more because he was coming back from the injury. Angle was going off on ECW, and so they were kind of using that to his more. But at the same time, it just didn't quite connect with me. Also, the counter that Orton has of the ankle lock to send Angle like to the other side of the ring and turned around into the exposed turnbuckle. What sort of English do you have to put on rolling your leg right, to send a guy in exactly that direction?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit of wrestling physics for you, right?
I picture him just like in the gym working on that move with some like bum that he fouled you. I mean, all right, come on. We're really going to work on the exact angle and trajectory. I need to whip you into the corner across the ring. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Austin practicing which stunner to send the guy over the top rope in the rumble.
Yes.
That's the exact angle we need to work on. Glenn, had you watched, I know you were, you know, you were in the catacombs in case Claire no-showed last week, but did you end up watching One Night Stand to prepare?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
And while I haven't seen the Angle Orton SmackDown match from the King of the Ring tournament in a long time, since it aired, actually, I can't really speak to that match, but I think among their pay-per-view matches in this era, I think One Night Stand is the best one. Mm-hmm. In part because of the environment, but also the way they were playing off the environment.
Yeah, the environment fuels so much of it. Scott, I'm curious your take on it, too, since you just watched it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Because to me, it was almost the same match, you know what I mean? It's almost like they ran it back, with the difference being the crowd was so vicious at One Night Stand, and you could see it fueling them, so they had a little extra pep going. But I feel like the actual structure of the match was fairly similar.
Yeah, I agree. The pace of the match pretty much went the same. It's because they didn't really go into weapons or extreme things at One Night Stand, so it's not like they had to take any segments away to fill it with something else. But the crowd, that's one of my 3 points. The crowd, it wasn't a bad crowd. Obviously not as hot as Hammerstein, but they were pretty solid. But it did add a different energy to the match. A point two. And it sucks because of what would happen. We didn't really know this at the time, but Kurt did feel, to me, he felt like an afterthought here. Knowing Orton was probably going to win because he lost the One Night Stand match, you do feel Kurt kind of just handing off a win. And it's, you know, it kind of sucks because I really loved his character. The ending made sense. So Angle isn't beaten clean because I don't know if at the time if they knew how long he was going to go anyway. But and an extra point I want to make about Kurt, and to piggyback some of the things you said, Glenn, I really feel like, and I loved watching Angle these 7 years, and he's been fantastic, and he was, you know, here was a guy who didn't seem to be your, and you mentioned it too, JR, he didn't seem to be your normal Attitude Era guy. He was more of a mat technician. He seemed like a guy that would have fit better in, like, 94 than he would.
Thankfully, it's not when he showed up.
But yeah. I know. Than he would have now. But than he did in 99. But fit in so much better than I think anybody gave him credit for.
Well, if anything, he came at the right time, whereas if he come like a year earlier, it might have been a little tricky. But he kind of came right at the transition of, you know, he could work the whole clean-cut gimmick and it would become a heel thing. But he also came in right on the cusp of the work rate improving, the wrestlers coming into the company, you know, the Radicals and Taz and all those guys, Jericho. You know, it timed out well. Because if he came in a year earlier, you know, who's he working with? Maybe we get that, you know, the dream match with Kurt Angle. But, you know, with Ken Shamrock. But, you know, what else do we really get from an in-ring point of view? Because a big part of his first year, the success, besides his mic work, was some of the matches he was having. You know, so
right.
That was a big part of it. And I don't think you have that fully in 99. Even a guy like The Rock, who, you know, Glenn can groan. But, you know, he had a strong year in 99 on the mic and everything else. But in-ring, 2000 was really the year where he kind of started to pick up a little bit. So, mm-hmm. you know, having a fully functional Rock, Triple H, who arguably in his best year, the Radicals, Jericho, Taz, also, you know, this influx of guys that he could work
Benoit.
With.
Right.
Yeah. The influx of guys he could work with was such a big, you know, uptick for him versus what he would have had in 99. Even like a guy like Rikishi to work off of.
Exactly. And as time progressed, he ended up being a much more important guy in that gap in 03, 04, 05 because he, you know, he was kind of a stalwart as the roster was kind of going through the changeover, particularly on SmackDown. Raw, everything, obviously, Shawn and Triple H and all those guys. Raw was okay in the leadership department. But SmackDown needed some stability while the roster was kind of turning over, and he was the guy that did that. So, he deserves a lot more credit than I think he does, even now, almost a decade later when he left. My only regret is that I love this Killing Machine character, and he just didn't get it soon enough. Mm. The goofy part was fun, and we liked him in 01 with Austin and everything. But I wish, like, in 02 or even 03 when he was feuding with Brock, I wish he was that kind of killer guy now. If you had 06 Angle and 03 Brock, those matches are already great. They would have been even better.
Right.
That's my only regret with Kurt, is that I wish he had gotten that Killing Machine character a little sooner.
Well, it's a tough timing, you know? Too, because, I mean, the injury hit him hard in 04. It seemed like maybe he was on that path in 04, and then he got thrust into the GM thing. Mm. And then 05, he kind of was doing it again, having the feud with Michaels, and then he gets, you know, kind of quickly turned and forced into the feud with Cena with that whole, you know, we talked about that really awkward dynamic. So it's like they finally gave him what he wanted, was to be the top face of the brand that he could just go run and do what he wanted as the guy. You know, it's like they finally gave him that full chance, and it just so happened to be the year he broke down completely.
Right.
And it also coincided with the Rey Mysterio thing, because I think the argument could be made even at this point, you could have just kept the belt on him even longer. But, you know, they had built so much towards Rey that they had to do it.
Right. No, they did. So Randy Orton gets the win, and farewell, Kurt. That's right.
I look forward to getting the monthly Kurt Angle TNA updates on a future podcast.
There you go. Yes. Have to have LaRue come on.
Yeah.
A new opening.
Time now for the latest. zippity doo. All right. We go backstage, JR.
We do go backstage, where Vince McMahon, speaking of, is on a phone, and a handicapped gentleman, or child, I guess, comes into
this clip is ridiculous.
Is in a wheelchair with a DX shirt, comes into his office. Paranoid Vince thinks it's the DX setup, because DX has been pranking him for weeks now. He starts flipping out on the kid, shoves him down a hallway in the wheelchair as he screams. Coach comes in and says he found a penis pump outside the door, and tells Vince he brought a family friend to meet Vince, and reveals that it was a handicapped kid. I actually thought it was a pretty funny bit. Like, I thought Vince's reactions were pretty good. And even though you could kind of see it coming from a mile away, it was done in such a camp way, especially at a time period where the humor was getting real bad. Like, with all the DX and Vince stuff, this actually, to me, stood out as you know, it made me chuckle. Like, I thought it was pretty funny. You know, Vince, it was so over the top that it's funny.
Exactly. And it's so in character for Vince, too.
Right. Right.
It really is a step up over some of the other DX pranks. I mean, they showed in the video package at the beginning of the show a few of them. You know, hey, Vince, you really like cock, so here's a rooster. You know, and oh, ho, ho, they slimed him. Yeah, great. This one actually has a little bit of that crazy Vince edge to it.
Oh, God. It's almost like, you know, like PTB Vince, you know, if Claire was like, oh, Vince, I have a Lions of Liberty listener that would love to meet you. And, ah, fuck him. And, you know, Vince throws him out of the limo or whatever. It seemed very, very Vince-ish of all capacities. All right, next up.
Well, I'm curious your take, because I know we'll get there, but your take on the, you know, being such a DX fan. And, you know, I remember, obviously, we were friends at this time, so I kind of remember a little bit. Just something I want you to think of over the, I want you to think of over the next, you know, hour or so is your thoughts, because we'll talk about it at the time, your thoughts on the DX humor and mm-hmm. whether or not you thought it was, you know, well done or not, I guess.
Okay. Sure. Well, we'll get to it when we get to the,
right,
to
right,
the main
yeah,
event.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to when we get to the main event.
I know. I'm just saying I want to put it in your head to think about over the next 90 minutes.
Sure. But our next match, a little character enhancement match here. And
hey, PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan is here! At long last! He is on our screens! He is back! Feel the power, Scott! Feel the power of the 2x4!
God. Oh, this is dreadful. Oh, absolutely dreadful. Dreadful. I can't remember when the last time he was actually on camera. Ugh, this is awful. Well, JR, you know,
it was recent, wasn't it? Wasn't it? I feel like he was just on. Right? Yeah. We just did this. Was it the Rumble or like Cyber Sunday or something? Was it or Taboo Tuesday, whatever it was? I feel like he was on not that long ago.
Was he one of the? Was it Taboo Tuesday? Was he one of the?
I think so. I don't think this is his first appearance.
One of the legends with not Carlito.
I think he came back and like, oh yeah, because he was on the Raw Homecoming. Isn't that when we talked about it? And then
yeah,
he was around then.
Okay. All right, well, still sucks. Great number
five. Eugene faced off with Matt Stryker and introduced Jim Duggan as his tutor. After Duggan ran Stryker off post-match, Umaga showed up and destroyed Duggan. The next week, Umaga defeated Duggan in a match and tied Eugene in the ropes and forced him to watch as he wrecked Duggan once again. And I just picture you cheering on Umaga from the corner.
That's right.
Or holding Eugene
holding
down.
Eugene down.
And
what's this, Eugene?
And I feel like, you know, in the opposite kind of what we talked about, I feel like we should be playing Celebrate, you know, Good Times here instead of Whitney Houston. But Eugene's final pay-per-view appearance remained on TV, bouncing from Raw to Heat to SmackDown through August of 07. His run also included a short heel turn that was quickly aborted, like his whole gimmick should have been about a year ago. On September 1st, he was officially released. He bounced around the indie scene for a while, signed back with WWE in July of 09 to perform on TV and train. That run was short-lived, too. Was released from both roles on August 14th, 4 days after his lone TV appearance. After leaving WWE, he headed to Canada, began performing as Eugene, the letter U-Gene. His final pay-per-view record, 2-5. So, there you go.
When did he get pinched for something in... Didn't he get pinched for something in England? Was that this run, or was that 09? Remember that when Raw was in...
It's Mr. Kenna doing the pinching.
Well, that's true, yeah, among other things. No, there was a Raw in England, and
yeah, I think you're right.
The story that he got like prescriptions or something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Something happened, but anyway.
Yeah, he was released after failing a second drug test, September 07.
Okay.
Wasn't there one instance where he was like passing out in a hotel because he took his sleeping pills early?
Yes, I think you're right.
That might be it too. I thought that was the one in England, but. That might have been another.
November 05, Dinsmore was rushed to the hospital after passing out in a hotel lobby in Manchester. Was suspended indefinitely.
Okay, there you go. So, okay.
Admitted to taking somas and prescription drugs, coincided with the announcement of the new drug policy. So, bad timing. Looks like he's still I think he's still going. He actually went back to WWE again as a trainer in NXT for about a year. He was there from September 13 to October 14.
Oh.
Now he's wrestling in, it looks like, Great Britain. And he began running his own shows in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, under Midwest All-Pro Wrestling. first event was November 7th, 2015. So,
interesting.
There you go.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I do remember reading about him opening up that promotion in South Dakota, wanting to make South Dakota a place for wrestling, which it hadn't really been because there aren't any people there.
He wanted to make South Dakota great again.
Yeah.
We could ask co-host of the NBA team podcast, Adam Murray, lived in South Dakota for a couple of years, so we can find out if he ever went, went to any of the shows. I'm sure not. I think he was already back by the time this started.
Seems like his cup of tea, though. Show as bizarre as that.
Tea? Tea? Along with a cameo appearance by Doink and Kamala, Jim Duggan, okay, I am wrong, makes his first in-ring pay-per-view. Okay, pay-per-view. So I think it was the homecoming he was on that we talked about him.
Yes.
So first pay-per-view appearance since rejoining the company in an active Legends contract role after spending 8 years in WCW, including a well-publicized bout with cancer. Duggan hit the indie scene after WCW closed, including a brief run at TNA, mended the fences with WWE in 2005. So that's, what, 12 years after he had last been on TV, showing up at the October Raw Homecoming Special and Taboo Tuesday. Okay, so he was at Taboo Tuesday as well. Popped up again at the 06 Rumble, after the 06 Rumble, would remain on TV, serving as Eugene's mentor. And last time, of course, he was on TV on pay-per-view, like we mentioned, was 93, King O the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene. Umaga, by the way, he's involved here, too. Him and Mr. Estrada are gaining steam, as Umaga's been great in the ring, and Estrada great in the mic. Eugene's still hanging around, like we mentioned. Gimmick is just so, so stale. To me, it felt like one of those guys that hung around until like 94, 95 from the, you know, early 90s. It's just like, at this point, you just get a clean house. You know, you just got to go. It's like the Tatanka 96. You know, it just it feels so out of place, him hanging around still here. Used up, to me, every semblance of what that character, you know, any worth he had. So he brings out Doink, Duggan, and Kamala's backup. Again, cheap parlor tricks just to give him any kind of chance. I did think it was kind of cool seeing Kamala. This should have done him here. Umaga wrecks Eugene off the bell, mauls him with clotheslines and strikes. Eugene tries to pepper his way back in. Umaga cuts him down, kicks him in the gut. Umaga quickly finishes with the spike. I thought the shenanigans actually ended up working as the crowd got into it, mainly yelling ho. Umaga murders Duggan and Doink, but avoids Kamala. I liked that little showdown they had, and I was interested. Did they ever have a TV match, Glenn? Do you remember anything? Because I feel like they really built to something here. The way they had the big stare down after the match, it wouldn't have been really neat.
Oh, I don't remember. They might have. The thing basically about Umaga and Kamala, though, is they're basically mirrors from like 20 years apart.
Yeah.
They even have kimchi.
Yes, although this kimchi is much more entertaining than they
True.
Were. The showdown though reminded me of just an old school two monsters looking, you know, you're right though, not even just mirror images of each other as gimmicks, but they even like were kind of looking at each other like they were looking in a mirror, you know what I mean, like Umaga in the ring and Kamala on the floor just kind of, or was it the other way around, I forget, but they were just kind of staring each other down wondering if they should attack, and then Estrada backs Umaga down. But that, to me, that was the highlight of the match. I wish they just did that instead of stupid Eugene. They should have had Umaga just destroy Eugene on TV and then set up Kamala. That's my thought.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Idea, JR.
Squash City. I mean, you want to keep booking Umaga this way. Like, that's fine. The booking's been great.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, Eugene sucks.
I don't know. I think this is a criminal misuse of Eugene. He deserves much better than to be treated like Barry O.
You sure? I don't know about that at this point.
Let's count the number of belts on Eugene Butler, okay? The only belts he has are the ones at JCPenney. But this is a perfect use of Eugene because of his limited resume. No. Anyway, it is perfect use of Eugene. Perfect length of the match, barely 2 minutes. I don't think we need much more of it.
Was Eugene salvageable, or was it a Red Rooster type thing?
Nah, it's cooked. Because in my opinion, he was part of Bischoff's thing.
I should say this. Was Nick Dinsmore salvageable, not Eugene? Was Nick Dinsmore salvageable? Or was it a Red Rooster scenario where the stink of that gimmick was just all over him?
You know what? You know what they could have done if they wanted to salvage Nick Dinsmore? They were just starting up ECW. They could have done the born again doink thing from ECW with Eugene, where like he gets turfed as Eugene, maybe by Umaga here, and then decides, fuck it, I'm done with this endearing gimmick and I'm done palling up with the legends and I'm gonna try to, you know, do something else. Or he gets like psychologically broken or something like doink in old ECW. You know, if they really wanted to go whole hog with trying to ape ECW angles, they had Eugene right there to do it.
And you know, he, I feel like for years everyone kept waiting for the shoe to drop of him pretending, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
To me, that's what it seemed like the natural thing was. Eventually it would be, you know, shown as a ruse, and whether it was Bischoff had put him up to it or it was him doing it to gain sympathy... Like, it seemed like it made so much sense. I mean, I get why they'd be a little trigger happy to do that. You know, like, okay, we portrayed this. But, like, go for it. Because it's not like you portrayed him in a good light. You know, you didn't have, you know, you abused him. You had guys kick the shit out of him. And, you know, like, we talked about that.
Yeah, well, you know what?
And Sandman caned him.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm saying at the point that they're at right now, all the reasons why it would be uncomfortable in the extreme to do that sort of angle with Eugene are reasons not to do the Eugene character in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, unless you're going to pay it off with some kind of reveal, to actually, you know, roll him out there on that level made no sense at all. And it wasn't even, you know, the sympathy was tough to swallow. But we talked about this a lot at One Night Stand when Sandman beat the shit out of him. It's like, you know, it's just tough to get behind. It's like you're watching it, this guy just getting rattled by a cane and you know what he's supposed to be. I don't know. It either needed to be a really short shelf life or it needed to be, you know, a setup from the start. To me, those are the only two real ways to go about it. And they went the other way, which sucked.
Meanwhile, I mean, you want to talk about gimmicks with uncomfortable social dynamics. That's literally everyone involved in this match. You know, that's Kamala, the non-speaking wild savage. That's Umaga, the non-speaking wild savage. That's, you know, not so much Doink, but Hacksaw, if you want to get into all the jingoism and all the stuff with the flag, you know, there are reasons... A powerful new force, yes. You know, you can get into that with pretty much everyone here.
Right. Who's the referee for this one? What if we could throw him in the mix, too? And Jerry Lawler was also on commentary, so there you go. There's another one, right? You can throw him in the mix. At least 06 Jerry Lawler, so Will doesn't fly home from Europe and come beat on me. The power of a new force from overseas.
Yes.
Get the blood pumping.
Big time. The hair standing on the back of my neck. We done here?
I could have told that to you about 15 minutes ago.
I think we were done before we started on that one.
Yeah. So there you go. Umaga wins and continues his ascent. Glenn, did you think at this point that they were going to make Umaga something really big, or do you think he was simply just going to be like mid-card? Or do you think they could have, at this point, you think plans could have been made for him to be like a main event player?
At this point in time, I didn't think his ceiling was very high at all.
Okay.
I thought he was just another generic hulking big dude who was beating up jobbers.
Mm. With an outdated gimmick.
Yeah, exactly. And so to try to build something genuinely entertaining or genuinely, you know, powerful in a wrestling context, a powerful new force, if you will,
powerful new force,
would have seemed difficult to me at this time. We'll see as we, you know, go through the timeline how that goes. But at this point in time, I had no concept of him moving up the card significantly.
Okay.
No, he hadn't had that performance yet, right? You know, he was the guy, like you said, he's just been out there mowing guys down. You needed to see that. Excuse me, I don't want to say transcendent performance, but something to put him over the top. And I think Estrada was making those strides, like, you know, people were getting behind him a little bit. So you get the pieces. Putting him under the manager was very shrewd, because especially at a time where they didn't really have many, you know, if any managers, It was a good throwback. It's a throwback gimmick, and it's a guy that you can't have talk. Put him with a manager. It made a lot of sense. So we'll see his progression. That's one of the guys I'm really looking forward to throughout 06 and 07 is watching how he progresses, because we know what he becomes, but it's interesting to see his climb up the ladder.
Yeah, Armando is definitely an example of one of those things where one good manager comes along and people start saying, oh, are they going to bring back managers? This guy's doing really well. Can they see the value that a manager has and bring them back for more people who really need them? And then there's this one person who's a good manager and they sort of manage a guy and that's the deal.
And not even, you know, and even take it the other way, not only get other managers, but expand his stable. Let him manage other people.
Yeah.
He's so good at it.
Most definitely. I liked Estrada, too. I wonder if he was going to build a stable. Maybe he could have gotten Kamala and could have had an entire faction of barbarians and then bring back the barbarian, because at the time he was probably still in better shape than some of those guys. We go backstage, JR.
We do.
Yes.
Okay. We do. And that is Mick Foley, reading excerpts from Ric Flair's novel, claiming it was fiction. Reads what Flair wrote about him. Foley, by the way, pure heel now. Just pretty much, you know, didn't ever turn after what happened in One Night Stand and all the build for that. Doing some of the best work, I thought, and we'll see it over the next 2 months, of his career on the mic, at least since 2000, for sure. You know, he's been on and off. But I think it's some of his best stuff in a long time. He vows to out-wrestle Ric Flair. Because remember in the build-up, he had said, is he going to tank the match purposely, basically. He says he's going out there and doesn't care. He's not going to give the fans what they want. And now he comes out here and basically says, screw you. I'm going to actually out-wrestle Flair. I'm not just going to go out and, you know, brawl and do my hardcore stuff. I'm going to prove that I can outwork him on the mat. Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
Which leads us to this match.
On 6/12, Mick Foley was in the ring talking about One Night Stand when Ric Flair interrupted him. Flair wanted to confront Foley and elaborate on things he said about Foley in his book. Flair is pissed off that Foley could become a star by being thrown off a cage instead of earning it like others had. Foley retorted that the fans were too young to remember all of Flair's classic matches and that Flair is just angry that Foley could take him apart at will. Flair challenged him to a match, but Foley said he was too banged up for the night before and instead challenged him to a best of three falls at the pay-per-view. Flair accepted. The next week, Foley cost Flair a match against Edge by applying the mandible claw from the ring apron. So, again, refresh for Foley. First time he's been a full-time heel since 98. So, definitely welcomed and needed. Best of three falls had many excited. Foley said he wanted to prove he could out-wrestle Flair. Flair gets a great reaction, as always. Of course, he is here in his hometown. Lawler says he was out partying and may not be prepared for this one since they're in Charlotte. I thought that was interesting. A very pro-Flair crowd as he grabs a hammerlock and Foley trades off holds with him. Foley lands the first big impact move with a running knee to the face and a double-arm DDT. Foley pulls out Mr. Sacco, dolled up like Flair, but Flair blocks with a testicular claw and then chops away. Flair hits a top rope axe handle, which is always funny when he actually hits it, but then wrenches his knee when he lands. Foley goes right to work on the knee, but Flair grabs a quick inside cradle to win the first fall. A pissed off Foley yells at the ref and gets flustered, but hits a clothesline. Foley dumps Flair to the floor and works him over, but Flair shoots him into the steps. The brawl spills into the fans and back into the ring. Foley grabs a trash can, but Flair trips him up. Flair grabs a figure four, but Foley grabs a trash can and bashes Flair to draw a DQ to some loud boos. Very weak ending, but I thought it was a good reason because it sets up a really fun rematch. Foley stuck to his promise, but he couldn't pull it off, so then he had to resort to his usual weapons. I thought it was good booking, good heel work for Foley. And then he grabs a barbed wire bat and bashes Flair in the head with it and starts grating and smashing him in the head over and over. Flair is just ridiculously gushing blood here. The match, again, disappointing, but I thought it all made perfect sense, and I thought it made Foley a super douchebag heel as Flair's blood was just disgusting here. Soft match, but I thought it was a really good segment. And, you know, part of you wonders, could this have just been, you know, on TV? I don't know, but I thought it worked. As long as you can swallow the fact that they did this on pay-per-view to set up another match, it's okay. I remember Scott watching at the time and being really disappointed because I was really hyped up for this match. Mm-hmm. But looking at it now, in retrospect, in the big picture, it actually really continues the feud nicely. And it's very inspired heel stuff by Foley. It's doing the anti-hardcore stuff without being so, you know, ham-fisted about it.
Right. Yeah, number one, we knew about the tension that these guys had in real life because we read, you know, all of Foley's books and we read Flair's books, so we knew that there were issues. So you knew inevitably they were gonna meet. Point two, the stipulation really did nothing for the match. It maybe should have just been one fall. I mean, I don't think they really, not that they really went ridiculously long, but. And third point. I agree with you about the segment as a whole. I mean, the match was kind of trash, but the whole segment is really good. But do we really need to see more Flair bleeding? I mean, this guy's going to run out of platelets.
But this one, you should do it. Some of these other times has been ridiculous. But this is really setting up a big blood feud rematch. Like, I'm okay with it here. Some of the other times we've seen it was gratuitous and over the top.
Maybe it's just maybe he didn't mean to bleed that much. Well, not that you mean to bleed, but
I don't think he can help it. Yeah,
I mean now I think it's just like fucking Kool-Aid. I think he's taking Coumadin or whatever the blood thinner is or whatever. It's like Jesus Christ. What are your thoughts, Glenn?
I kind of get hung up on the ways that they kind of hampered themselves here. Part of it was unavoidable because they were trying to do a lot of mat work, which goes at about half speed because they're both kind of old and washed up. I think, Justin, you were talking about the fact that this is on pay-per-view and it felt like more of a TV segment. I mean, I understand doing a match to lead to the rematch. I don't object to that necessarily, but I think the match that you're doing first needs to have some oomph to it. And they were trying to give it that oomph here with the bleeding, with the weapons. But again, it wasn't quite connecting for me. Even though Foley was doing a lot of his old ECW stuff, where he was doing the anti-hardcore stuff and he would go out and do mat work and do chin locks and, you know, the thing that seemed so absurd to me is when Foley goes for the figure four and Flair rolls him up for the first fall. And like I said, it's moving at about half speed. Meanwhile, JR is yelling about Jack Briscoe and Harley Race and all the wars they had.
Yep, that's right.
It just seems so absurd.
Yeah,
it did.
But I mean, I can appreciate on a story construction level the fact that Foley is going out there and rolling around and doing this mat work and then defaults to the hardcore stuff because he is a broken man in a fallen world. Which, you know, I can appreciate that. I think we can all sympathize.
He was just trying to become the powerful new force that he hoped to be.
Yeah, exactly. And also, this whole feud feels completely separate from everything else going on the show.
It does.
And I know that, like, feuds aren't really interacting all that much as they did sometimes in the past, but it really feels like they're off in their own alternate universe here.
2006 very much feels like a Mick Foley vanity project year. It's like he comes back, wants to have a big Mania match with his buddy Edge, so they do that. Then he does this, you know, big pathos play with, you know, his icon, his, you know, his mentor, Terry Funk. Yeah. You know, again, with his buddy Edge and Dreamer for the ECW stuff. Now that's done. So, okay, next up, I want to have this Flair. You know, this has been killing me that Flair said this shit about me in his book, and now we're going to feud about it. You know, again, you know, typical Foley likes to pull from reality and let it fuel him and do what he can for business. And then we'll go a step further next month at SummerSlam. 2 months, I guess. You know, it goes even further. His, you know, vanity portion of all this. So, we'll cover it. But yeah, to me, this whole year of Foley booking has felt very, like, it's very fitting for Mick Foley, but very masturbatory. And I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, a lot of it's been pretty good. Like, the Mania match was great. The One Night Stand match was great. I think, you know, the match they have coming up that this sets up is really good. So it hasn't been bad, but it's definitely been like, all right, Foley, what do you want to do? And here's all the shit he's been, like, concocting for years that he's wanted to do.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing about this match. During the entrances, I spied a sign saying, if Flair loses, we riot, which shows you just how little time it took after One Night Stand for that to become cliche.
Right, exactly. I mean, I guess at the very least, it's in his hometown. So yeah, you can give him a little credit, I guess.
Yeah, there's some sense to that, Glenn. But yeah, eventually it's
sense, I guess.
But, well, no, it does make sense. It does make sense here. But when you just start doing random, you know, if Eugene wins, we riot. I mean, things like that. I mean, then it starts getting kind of ridiculous. But
although that would actually be fitting because I think most would have rioted if he won.
Coumadin! Where'd you get that version? It's like some elevator music version. Speaking of Andy Gibb, you know where you can hear Andy Gibb and lots more great music like that? On the iconic Yacht Rock channel, which fired off earlier today on Sirius XM.
5 p.m. Eastern, it started up. And, of course, you heard a little Yacht Rock. I meant to mention it when the show opened, so I hope you enjoyed.
Yes, you'll be hearing more of that throughout the next 4 months.
until later. I'll drop it in here and there.
Here and there. Fun, good stuff. A little pina colada, some... Dreamweaver. Heard that today. All right. Next up, JR, we have our first, Glennie, we have our first title match of the evening. The WWE Intercontinental title is on the line. No clotting. I had to fit Armento in somewhere. All right, your champion, as JR mentioned, is Mr. Shelton Benjamin, who defeated RVD, who would have had three belts at the same time had he not lost eventually. A couple of new opponents. Well, one opponent, now babyface. The other, now a singles wrestler, JR. Tell us about those guys.
Well, if you remember, back at Judgment Day, Johnny Nitro and Melina were fired from SmackDown, and they showed up right away on the 529 Raw. Nitro took on John Cena in a non-title match, so right away getting a push. On 6-5, Carlito defeated Shelton Benjamin in a non-title match. The next week, Nitro defeated Carlito and his sister Benjamin. And prior to the bout, it was announced that the three men would face off for the IC title at Vengeance. On 6-19, Nitro defeated both men in a non-title triple threat match, so seemed to be teasing what was to come. Mm-hmm. Nitro Molina now solo acts on Raw. That was a good attempt to roll the dice. Of course, they had been struggling on the mic thus far, though, but the ring work seemed to be carrying things. Molina looking fetching as always. Shelton Benjamin back as IC champion, still doing his arrogant heel gimmick. This is a good mix of talent. It's a strong opportunity for both Nitro and Carlito to show off what they can do. Shelton starts hot, grabs a quick near fall on Carlito, then hammers away. Carlito comes back and works a headlock, fending off Nitro and wearing down Shelton. I thought it was a really good stick and move from all three with the pace picking up. Carlito knocks Shelton to the floor and then slingshots Nitro out as well, but Molina gets involved, and Nitro trips up Carlito on the edge of the ring and shoves him into the post. Nitro and Shelton both trade blows on the floor until Carlito hits a gorgeous springboard somersault dive. I thought that was the best move of his career to date. It blew me away. I don't know where he pulled it from. Carlito controls back in the ring until Nitro cuts him off and grabs a near fall. Nitro ducks a springboard moonsault, but Carlito pops up and hits a hurricanrana instead. Shelton rushes in and cuts off a Carlito charge of the pancake for two. Shelton tosses Nitro to the floor with a T-bone and gets a vertical suplex on Carlito for a near fall. Shelton catches Nitro with snake eyes for two as all three are a bit worn down after a hectic pace. Carlito leaps on Shelton from behind into a victory roll for two and then whips Shelton into the corner, but Nitro catches him with a monkey flip right into a Carlito dropkick, and I thought the chemistry here was fantastic. Nothing really felt forced or set up in any way. Nitro catches Carlito up top, but Shelton crotches him, and he gets caught in a tree of woe. Shelton leaps up to the top rope and loads up a superplex, but Nitro crunches up and powerbombs Shelton on the way down. I thought that was an amazing spot, especially the core strength of Nitro there. Carlito gets a flurry of offense on both as the crowd is heating back up. Hits a double springboard elbow for two on both guys. Carlito with the backstabber on Shelton, but Nitro yanks him out and covers for the win. I thought this was a great match. I thought the finish made sense. I thought Nitro needed the win and the title the most. I'm curious what you guys think. If Carlito wrestled like this every match, or at least like 75% of his matches, I think he would have been a superstar. I mean, he looked fantastic. I mean, this is three young horses just letting loose. Match of the night candidate, easy. You know, maybe match of the month even, if it were for One Night Stand. One of the best 2006 WWE non-One Night Stand division pay-per-view matches that we've seen so far. I don't know. This was awesome. Like, it really caught me off guard how good it was. And I thought Carlito looked fantastic. What'd you think, Glenn?
I was surprised how few double team spots there were in this match, or spots involving all three guys. I mean, that's one thing that makes the Tower of Doom spot stand out, I suppose, is that it's one of the only ones I can think of off the top of my head. And you're right, Nitro crunching up out of the Tree of Woe for that was amazing. I think it's just as well that now that Nitro is a singles guy, and now that they're moving him to Raw, that they're giving him the title to try to establish him as something. I'm not sure how much the Intercontinental title means right at this point, after it had kind of a flirtation with relevancy again with RVD in the last couple of months. I was kind of distracted during this match because Ric Flair's blood is still all over the mat.
Yes, it is.
It was kind of gross.
Koeman and Running Wild.
Koeman and Running Wild.
Definitely.
All three guys, perfect three guys to put in this match. I agree, JR. The chemistry is through the roof. Particularly Shelton. You mentioned Carlito, but I think Shelton, even though he obviously knew he was dropping the strap, he brought the juice. I mean, I think the best thing about Shelton in this match, I feel like his moveset set up the other two guys perfectly. He was almost like the foundation stuff that set up the other two guys both responding to his, selling his moves, and setting up their own. So I give a big thumbs up to Shelton in this match. He really did a great job setting up the other two guys, particularly Nitro, who obviously was pretty high on creative's radar. And finally, like just to piggyback what you were saying, Nitro needed the win more than anything. I mean, obviously gets a Cena non-title match like immediately out of the gate. So I think he kind of knew he was going to win. It had that feeling, but I mean, not
him,
upset
him
about it.
Even the non-title one kind of throws you off a bit because you kind of think, well, he got his win there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I mean, he definitely needed it.
Yeah, no,
it was clear they were getting behind him big time for the push. I mean, that was
no doubt. I mean, you know, first match out the gate and he's wrestling Cena, belt or no belt, it didn't matter still. So there you go. Johnny Nitro is your new Intercontinental Champion in a very good match. And like I said, JR, definitely one we could put up in the top three for match of the year so far on pay-per-view. Speaking of title matches, we have another one now, and it is the WWE Championship on the line. Your champion, of course, Mr. Monday Night, Mr. Money in the Bank, Mr. Rob Van Dam, who of course won it at One Night Stand, against the former WWE Champion for 3 weeks earlier in the year. How did he get the spot, JR?
Actually, as I mentioned too, we went backstage quick after that, where Vince McMahon gives a pep talk to the Spirit Squad and strips down to use the penis pump in the bathroom, but it explodes on him and blasts him with green paint. So it was a nice flirtation with a little bit of unique humor before devolving back to this, but here we are. On 6/12, Paul Heyman announced that Edge would be recognized as the number one contender to Rob Van Dam's championship, and the next night on ECW, Van Dam would rechristen the WWE Championship as the ECW title. Edge later announced he'd show up the next night on ECW. And on that night, RVD was handed the brand new ECW title by Paul Heyman, but RVD said, hey, I'm keeping both titles. Edge then came out and told RVD that he respected him and was looking forward to their match. Edge then took RVD out with a spear and tried to escape through the crowd, but was stopped by Cena, who fought him back to the ring. On 6/19, Edge defeated Ric Flair, but after the match, RVD kicked Edge down and hit him with a frog splash. The next night on ECW, RVD pinned Edge in a tag team match. So that brings us here. Of course, you remember Edge had helped RVD win that title. And feigns respect build and then attacked RVD, who's having a massive year, face of both ECW and WWE. I think many assumed he'd probably drop the belt right back here and just go on to be ECW champion. So we'll see if that happens. Edge goes to the mat and mocks RVD to start. RVD wins a battle of dodging moves and then hits a standing moonsault followed by a windmill kick, but Edge bailed to the floor. RVD comes out after him and hits a moonsault off the barricade. But Lita interference trips him up, and Edge hits a stiff sunset flip powerbomb to the floor. Edge goes to work in the back and works a modified surfboard submission. RVD breaks free, and Edge ends up on the edge of the apron as RVD meets him with a crossbody, knocking the bolt to the floor. RVD hangs Edge on the barricade, but whiffs on a leg drop. Edge works the leg and back, spills back outside, where he powerbombs RVD to the barricade. Edge works some great offense, a guy that, you know, on a guy that can bump all around for him. Edge hits a stiff backbreaker and keeps RVD there for submission. RVD kicks his way back into it, but Edge keeps cutting him off until RVD hits a springboard back kick. Crowd is pretty split and a bit quiet here. RVD comes off with a bridge German, but Edge hits a rolling thunder, or Edge turns a rolling thunder into a power slam for two. That was a nice spot. RVD comes back with a missile dropkick. Edge rolls away before he can hit the five star, so RVD hops down, hits a rolling thunder and a split-legged moonsault for two. Edge sneaks away and grabs the belt from Lita, but RVD hits a Van Damminator to bust Edge open. Lita trips up RVD on the top rope, and Edge recovers to DDT him down in a pretty gnarly bump there. With the ref down, Lita holds up the chair between the two turnbuckles, but Edge misses the spear and crashes through it, and then RVD hits the five-star for the win. I thought it was a really big show of faith and a big win for RVD to get a hard-fought title match over a very high-level, tough challenger. I thought it was a pretty good match. I thought there were some slow stretches in between, but the big spots that were mixed in kind of carried it well enough. RVD, his reign's off to a good start, but all that said, it's still like fourth from the top, buried in the mid card. And when you look at what's on top, the top two matches, you really wonder, well, do they really think much of these guys? So what'd you think of this one, Scott?
Point one, I loved Lawler. I want to make a point about Jerry Lawler here. I thought his going back to the old school 97, being all babyface-ish throughout pretty much the entire promotion, except anything involving ECW, and then he went back to being the, you know, 97 douchey, which worked out great. I thought it was good dynamic with him and JR. Number two, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, was there really any doubt going in that Edge was going to win this? Like, all the signs, you know, led to it. RVD won the you know, pinned him in a tag, got the better of him for most of the build, had an actual ECW belt. So that meant that, well, he's not going to carry both around this long. Obviously, you know, they split it off, so they can have their own belt on their brand. And you were setting it up for Edge to hold the belt pretty much all the way to SummerSlam, at least, and the eventual rematch with Cena. So all the hints pointed to Edge winning this here, and that RVD winning at One Night Stand was just a way to pop the Hammerstein crowd at the end. So I was stunned when RVD actually won this match. I really had no thought he had no chance. Kind of the Rey Mysterio of Raw. Won for a cheap, you know, one night pop, and then pretty much got treated like crap after that. But he got treated a little bit better than Rey did. And number three, you know, we talk a lot, and we've even talked about it with Kevin Kelly about what kind of wrestler Edge is. And I feel like now he's slowly kind of morphing almost into a power wrestler, even though he's not a power guy. He only weighs, what, 240 probably? And he does a lot of power bombs and uses a lot of grapple maneuvers that bigger power guys would use. So I feel like when we always talk about that he's kind of a hybrid wrestler where he takes a little bit of everything, I really feel like, particularly as a heel, he kind of takes the moveset of a power guy. A lot of big strikes, a lot of grapples to kind of lean on guys. Which I think is fine. I think for a guy like Edge can pull that off for somebody who's not power looking. So those are my points. And it was a good match, better than I thought. But I really had no thoughts that RVD was actually going to retain the title here. What do you think, Glenn?
Especially since they set it up so well with, you know, splitting the belts. And mm-hmm. This is twice now they've deked us. Like, or once was, yep, Heyman counting the fall, where it seemed that it was going to set up a dusty finish, but that sticks. And then you say, okay, they're splitting the belts. They're going to make him ECW champion. He'll drop the Raw one and then just move on. And nope, he keeps it. So it was interesting the way they kept kind of faking out and mm-hmm. Just pushing forward RVD. Go ahead, Glenn.
I love the way they did that, though. The Raw, the night after One Night Stand, starts with Heyman and RVD saying quickly and definitively, they're not doing the dusty finish. It was a match contested in ECW. Under ECW rules, the decision stands. Boom, that's it. You know, they're not drawing it out other than the, you know, day since the end of the pay-per-view, I suppose. But they're not doing a huge angle centered on, you know, some sort of legalistic way out of it. No, screw it. It's an ECW. He's the champion. Deal with it. I thought that was a really good way to proceed with it. And giving RVD this win here, like you said, Justin, it's supposed to give you the feeling that they're really getting behind RVD, where he gets a hard-fought win. He is still double champion, but it's in the mid-card, and he's kind of the mid-card champion. And the crowd for most of the match was more interested in Lita than either of the people fighting in the match. You know, which is kind of... I would attribute half of that to where Edge is in still trying to build his heel character, playing off Lita, promising another live sex celebration, insulting sports teams, and about half to the dynamic they have where they're still doing some of this WWE versus ECW stuff, but they're in North Carolina, which wasn't exactly an ECW hotbed. And so the heat is going to kind of get cut. RVD, of course, is still someone that the crowd knew and was well-liked everywhere, so he still has some positive heat. And he pulls off some moves in this match that are really, really crisp. That German suplex into the bridge was great. The Van Damminator with the belt was pretty cool. And Edge, in terms of selling, has the best facial expression whenever he blades. Like, he blades and then he sits up like, oh, what's happening? He's just so dazed and confused. And that bit of selling is good in all of these Edge matches. And then they're telling a good enough story in terms of Lita interfering again and again and again, and then finally the one time that RVD manages to counter her interference, he wins the match. So, it's a good enough story being told there. I just felt like they didn't quite have as much chemistry as I expected them to. You know, it's still a solid enough win. You want to keep the RVD train rolling, but I wish that they would have been able to move the card around a little bit and make the title angle feel a little bigger.
Do you think if they had put this in the main event slot, because, you know, we're talking about it here, how the crowd was reacting and the structure of the match and everything else, do you think, does it close the show on a tough note? Or does the crowd get more into it because it's in the main event slot? Like, I feel like in theory, and I'm with you, it makes a lot of sense. Like, they're kind of sending a bad message to RVD. On the flip side, when you see how the match plays out, it's like, oh, man, would this have done more damage in some way if it was the last match of the night? And, you know, they closed the show and the crowd was the same way.
I think there would have been more heat in the main event, really.
Yeah.
They could have changed the booking a little bit, too. But I think even the way that they did this, RVD is still pretty strong as a face champion. Mm. So we can talk about it again when we get to the actual main event, but I really think this would have done better if it had been slotted in there.
Yeah.
I don't want to discredit the Charlotte crowd. I mean, they're not Johnny Come Lately's. I think in a main event slot, I think it would have been fine. I think the match would have been, I think the story would have been laid out a little differently. They probably would have got more time. I think it would have survived the last slot of the show. I give the Charlotte crowd a little bit more credit.
Well, you did mention that this crowd was pretty small, too.
Yeah, 6,800. So, which is only, what, about twice as much as, or maybe, yeah, about maybe twice as much as Hammerstein was?
Yeah, exactly.
But a bigger building, obviously, acoustics-wise.
Right, definitely. I mean, I wrote down a few times during the show that the crowd felt a little dead, and then when you said that the crowd was so small, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I think it might have fit last. I think the story might have been told a little differently, but I think it could have gone last.
It sure it would have been a hell of a vote of confidence. I mean, they've given him a lot, but it's similar to the Benoit thing. It's like, yeah, you won the Rumble. Yeah, you won at WrestleMania 20. Yeah, he's been the guy, but he's still in the mid-card every show, unless he's fighting Triple H. You know, so it kind of feels like it's the same thing here again. I guess on the flip side, RVD is still almost like, you have to look at it like probation, maybe. Like, he's still going to kind of prove that he can be trustworthy as the guy.
Well,
we'll see. see how that goes. I wonder if that was in play a little bit, or, you know, it's just straight up when you look at what the main event is. It was always doomed to be the last match, or destined to be the last match, and this was always doomed to the middle of the show, regardless.
Right. Right. So Rob Van Dam retains his WWE Championship in a very good match with Edge. A match that's we go backstage? No.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Where the ECW locker room celebrates the big win, and they prepare Sabu to compete for later in the night for the brand. Heyman reveals that the match will be an extreme lumberjack match with both ECW and Raw members at ringside.
Yes, we'll get to that match shortly. But first, though, another... How many of them, though? Which Kane is it? Yes, one of them has to be Kane. Or both of them Kane. What's going on here, JR?
On the infamous May 19th, Kane was challenging Rey Mysterio on SmackDown. During the match, a visual of Kane's old mask appeared on the Titantron, and the words, "It's happening again," echoed throughout the arena. On 5/22, Kane explained that May 19th was torturous because it was the day his mother and adopted family were killed. He claimed the day was now behind him and he was feeling better. Later in the night, he defeated Trevor Murdoch, but after the bout, the mask appeared again and the voice told him it would never be over. The next night, Kane was wrestling Shelton Benjamin, his old theme music played, and the man in Kane's old gear came to the ring, chokeslammed Kane, and brought fire from the ring posts. On 6/5, the mind games continued as the imposter haunted Kane backstage and took him out. A week later, Kane was wrestling Randy Orton when the imposter struck again. They fought up the ramp, and the imposter sent Kane flying off the stage with a chop to the throat. On 6/19, Jim Ross interviewed Kane, who revealed that he knew the identity of the imposter, and he was even sicker than himself. I do think it would have been cool if they had Imposter Kane light JR on fire, like Kane once did. And then, like, shock Shane's balls. Like, they should have went all out, just had him redo everything.
Had a couple of matches in red lights.
Right? You know, play it up. Kill Scotty Too Hotty. Developmental wrestler Drew Hankinson portrays the Imposter Kane here. He began his career in West Virginia, was signed to a developmental deal in April 2005. At that time, he was assigned to Deep South Wrestling and remained there until being tapped for this role in May. And the feud came to an abrupt end, guys, on June 26th due to a lack of crowd reaction. Kane lost a match to Randy Orton thanks to the imposter. After the bout, Kane hit two choke slams, followed by a third in the entrance ramp, dragged him backstage, ripped his mask off, and threw him out of the arena. The aborted finish for the angle made the finish here, we'll talk about in a minute, very perplexing. Imposter Kane would never be seen again, and Drew Hankinson returned to Deep South. All right, before we get into the match, without getting into the match, why don't you guys talk about the angle itself? Glenn, you want to start with that?
Sure. Wow. Yes. Kane is one of the few characters you can do something like this with. Not only because he has such a completely different look that you can bring someone back in, but also because, like his brother, Kane is a supernatural being. So when his past comes back to haunt him, it can literally come back to haunt him. And so I would have wanted to take it in a little more of a mystical, supernatural direction where, yes, that has got to be Kane. Literally. And so where they made it a little more... Yes, thank you. I mean, JR even points out during the entrances, he says, you know, talk about the Sci-Fi Channel. This match has some sci-fi-like elements. I thought it was cool to bring back Kane's old music to kind of lend to the whole look and the feel of the Kane or Faker. But I wish that when they do this, like, supernatural crap with Kane, that they would really just go all out with it. You know, they wind up doing these half measures where he's giving interviews about, oh, I know who the imposter is, and they make it just a dude.
Right.
Which I understand you're doing because you're a live TV show and he's played by a dude, but I just wish that they would really, like, embrace the fact that they're a TV show, you know?
Yeah, they tried to edge... They try and do this stupid shit, but it's still edge on some level of reality. I mean, the closest they actually ever came was the stuff I mentioned before with Kane and Shane, like where they kind of just said, fuck it, it's, none of this is real, so we're going to have like him crashing limos and murdering each other, and they're back out the next week doing the same crazy shit. Like, that was the closest they ever came to just admitting, like, whatever. And here, it's like they wanted to, but then back off.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had elements of it in all of the Undertaker-Kane stories going back to the Attitude Era with all the, like, melodrama about arson and killing the parents and all that stuff and Paul Bearer being secretly his father or whatever. You know, they had elements of that, like, soap opera stuff, but I'm just really looking for some meaty, meaty supernatural action. Hoo-ah.
I mean, this
Ooh, had to get that one off my chest too.
I guess so. This would have been, this absolutely would have been the place to do it too. I mean, why not? Like, what else are you going to do? You know, I mean, this is the time if we're going to do something ridiculous like this. I mean, at least in the, and I love the little bit of nuance they put in. Like you said, the old music, the old gear, the look, like they went just to the line and then backed off the last second. I do like too that they actually matched up physically, that they didn't do like the Undertaker 94 thing where, you know, that it was clear. You know, at least here, like, the guy kind of looks like Kane's size and build, and okay, it's a little bit believable. So Kane cracks the imposter to start, knocks him to the floor. The imposter lands on his feet and mimics the mannerisms and movements of old school Kane. Imposter lands a clothesline and strikes on the floor as the crowd has completely died off. Kane regains control in the ring and tried ripping the mask off, but he couldn't pull it off. Imposter takes over a slide with a side slam, aggressive strikes and chokes. Both alternated offense, which worked because you don't really want either in control for long stretches. The crowd turns to the match as the imposter grabs a choke slam, but Kane jams his thumb into his eye through the mask and hits a DDT. Kane followed with a power slam and a side slam, fending off the imposter strikes. The imposter hits a big boot and heads up top, but Kane catches him with a huge superplex that kind of got botched a little bit, but still looked cool. Imposter catches Kane coming off the top and hits a choke slam for a shocking clean win. Very random finish. Even now, I had completely forgotten that Imposter won. I thought Kane has buried him here. What would have been the end game? That's the question, too. I think it would have been cooler if Kane, the real Kane, was actually in a mask as well, so at least you had some confusion over who was who. Long, dull, and decent in spots, but the crowd was completely checked out and didn't really care at all. And to that degree, I think the finish would have mattered, or at least been better if the crowd gave a shit. You know what I mean? Like, they clearly didn't give a fuck what was going on. So that made the surprise, shocking ending not really mean much. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, this whole thing was just idiotic. Although I will say, I don't know how long his hair was, but Brian Lee might have been a pretty good Kane.
Right.
He might have just given him another shot.
Well, Hankinson wasn't bad. He actually had the movements down and everything else. The problem is, do you really want two Kanes? Like, that's
well,
the
yeah.
question. You know what I
mean? I mean, they tried this with one brother. Why do they think the other brother would have made it even better? I mean, really. Again, the Drew Hankinson, who would be multiple guys down the line, and multiple characters, did a good job, and you know, I won't belabor that point. He looked fine. He looked good in the outfit and everything. And I still don't understand the finish. Poor Kane had to eat the pin, and then they decide, nah, we're not going to do this anymore.
So, sorry, what crowd? I mean,
they changed their mind overnight.
You know, it's really funny. Like that, normally they never put that much faith in one crowd. You know what I mean? Like, it was shocking to me that they said, okay, that crowd last night didn't like this, we're going to abort the whole thing that we just put a ton of build into. It was really weird.
It was really weird. Considering it was a very, you know, again, I've mentioned this multiple times tonight, a reputable crowd like Charlotte. You know, we're not talking some random crowd in the Midwest or whatever. It was really strange. They just kind of gave up on it, so the company gave up on it. Very bizarre. Very bizarre. So, there you go. Imposter Kane wins.
What do you think of the match itself, Glenn?
It was slow and plodding and dull.
Yeah.
Don't really have a whole lot on it. The actual pinfall was kind of weird, where Hinterfager just like held Kane's arms way up, and that was the only part of him that he was touching as he pinned him. That was just strange.
Sounds like a barbershop window t-shirt. Kanerfaker.
Well, Kanerfaker, named after the Undertaker.
Yeah, no, I know. That's made it even funnier. So there you go. Any final thoughts on that, Glenn? You're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, not much more. All right, why don't we take a break? Thoughts so far, Glenn? It's got to be, because there's so many of them. Imagine JR did it. That's got to be Kane! Before we go to break, Glenn, your thoughts on the show so far?
The show is a little herky-jerky. You know, there are some high spots so far. Pardon my French, and some really, really low spots, such as one that we were just talking about a minute ago.
Right. Right. JR? Up and down?
Yeah, more down than up. I will say its reputation of being like, you know, like all-time bad show, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, a little better than that, but not by much.
Right. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, our last two matches, neither of them title matches. We got all the belts out of the way. Mm. Couple of multi-person matches here, a one-on-one with a bunch of guys at ringside, and then a misshapen handicap match full of penis pumps and oily dancers. But first, a myriad of Caner Faker words. Por qué?
Time to let the place to be, boys. Pay the bills.
Because I got to go get my Coumadin.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Nation, we are back looking at Vengeance 2006. But first, we'll take a look at PlaceToBeNation.com because it has been a while. Let's take a look at what we got going on over the last few days. A new rank and file was up. We got JD bringing in Ben Moore, Steve Willey, and Andrew Reich to draft, basically. Instead of doing a top 10 countdown this time, they're doing a wrestling fantasy draft for the year 2016. If you remember, much of the same crew was with Stephen Graham of the Pro Wrestling Super Show a couple years back, and basically they were comparing the two with the draft upcoming in WWE. So be sure to check that out. A new Imaginary Stories with Kelly and Johnny looking at their beloved early 80s DC Universe. PTB Action Show for Money in the Bank. Chris and Johnny Zorro were Johnny Zorro. We're flying, duo. I was going to say solo. Flying duo for this installment. So check that out. Their thoughts, along with Scott Keith's rant as well for Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. A very interesting show. NBA Team Podcast looking at a draft preview. That is Andrew Reich and Adam Murray. Of course, the draft is this Thursday. They go through all 60 picks and come to a consensus on each. So be sure to listen to that. If you go back as well, Stephen Riddle did his Vintage Vault previewing for this show, looking at the Ric Flair Mick Foley 2 out of 3 falls match that we talked about earlier. New episode of Exile on Bad Street, part 4 of the history of Continental Wrestling. Chris joined by Bo James. So if you've enjoyed the first three, make sure you listen to number 4. New Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast, new Fire in the Mountains podcast, tons of them. You'll never go bored if you subscribe to the feeds, PlaceToBeNation.com. Let's see what else we got. Omaha Bound, the 2016 College World Series preview from our buddy Logan Crossland as our sports coverage continues mm-hmm. to expand. Sky, you had a main event last week. Mainly a main event Money in the Bank preview. Of course, you had Chris Zellner on and Chad Campbell. What else did you talk about besides the preview, which is a little bit dated at this point?
Yeah, no, we. That's what was the second part. We, you know, Chris Zellner made his main event debut. So you know, some listeners may not know who he is or familiar with him. So we talked about his youth, you know, growing up in the South and watching all the territories. We talked a lot of territory stuff. It's really awesome. Talked about Georgia and AWA and some really awesome stuff. Kind of Coumadin. No. It linked up with our Super Sunday network adventure that we put up last week. So we were talking a lot of AWA and a lot of territory stuff. So it was really good. Definitely check it out. The Money in the Bank is the second half. See if we were right with our picks. But a lot of territory stuff last week on Main Event. It was a good show.
And of course, you can also check out our Vintage Vault Refresh series, the written version. We're into Monday Night Raws. Yep. We're up through into February. Of course, we have the infamous Brutus Beefcake return where they told him to kill himself as he was cutting his promo. So be sure to check those out as well. Glenn, your Wednesday Walk Around the Web. Anything else you want to plug in addition to that?
Find the Wednesday Walk Around the Web every week. Also, the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, is my podcast, obviously. This Friday, we will be releasing our episode on Star Trek 2009. That's with Greg Phillips. It's a really good time. Had a good time recording it. So that'll be up this Friday. And last week, we had an episode about the Orlando shooting. Very different subject. Not a lot of jokes and goofs in that one. But we are in the spectacular whenever we feel like talking about something. Find the episode with Mr. Criscolo about Star Trek Insurrection. That's a good one, too.
Yes, had a blast with you and your brother. It was a great time. Looking forward to coming back on again.
Scott Criscolo, Insurrections, Triple H Podcast. There you go. Of course, the Glenn Butler Spectacular is a show. You know, the concept of the show is one I've wanted for a long time, and that is a basically current event show, right? You do other stuff, but when something happens that you want to talk about in the world of current events, you jump in and you produce the podcast. So that's something I've wanted on the site for a long time, and Glenn, you were the man to do it, so I'm happy that you've had success with it. It's a great show. Everyone should be listening. What feed are you on now? You're on the Pop feed? We should talk about that too, right?
Yes, I was just going to say the premise of my show is basically anything I want to talk about that's not wrestling or sports, which is now the remit of the entire PTBN Pop feed, which has my show, Hard Traveling Fanboys, Russell Sellers podcast, Todd Weber. It's me and a lot of the comic book people and Lucha Undead. Mm-hmm. All of the podcasts from Place to Be Nation and our friends that aren't about sports or wrestling. All of those are still on the Place to Be podcast feed, but we have PTBN Pop for the rest of life, basically.
And you can find that if you search on iTunes. We have three podcast feeds for you now. We have Place to Be Podcast. That is all your, you know, PTB in name shows, wrestling based. So that's where you'll get your live watch, your reaction shows, Main Event, the new show that launches on Wednesday. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. That's Clotheslines and Headlines. You know, lots of stuff there. So that is all of those shows. You have your PWO PTBN feed. That is your Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, This Week in Wrestling. All that stuff is over on that feed still. That hasn't changed. PTBN Pop, that is where you'll find all the shows that Glenn mentioned. So be sure to subscribe to all three in iTunes. Go to all three. You can rate all three. You can leave comments for all three. That helps us climb up the rankings, climb up the ratings, get appearance, get recognition. So be sure to check all that out. Subscribe to all three of those feeds. So there's other ways too you can help us out. Click the Amazon banner on the right hand side, PlaceMation.com, before you go through to shop, and that'll kick back a percentage of the purchase to the website. Keeps us up and running. So it's really an easy step. You don't have to do anything else. You just go to PlaceMation.com, click the banner, go to Amazon, do that. Also, we have free ebooks available to you as well. You click the right hand banner, as you'll see P2B Publications. Scott and I's first three volumes of our Vintage Vault Refresh series are out there for you as well. So be sure to check those out. Absolutely free. Good beach reading for you in the, you know, beach areas, and good toilet reading for others. So be sure to check that out. a lot of fun there. And of course, like we mentioned earlier, go back and check out last episode as well, our chat with James Dixon, and get his books as well. More good toilet reading. So
toilets, the JR, the PIC story, toilets and yacht rocks.
Well, it's funny because James was very, like, he loved hearing about all the different places people like read his books or use his books, you know. So he was, that was a part of the conversation we had.
Yes.
So be sure to check that out. So there you go.
Okay. Let's go back to Charlotte. Flair country. Coumadin country. All right. Next up, kind of the co-main event here. As we kind of tail off the, you know, WWE versus ECW war here. In an Extreme Rules Lumberjack match. Give us the lowdown, Chair.
Not every little hoedown. 6:12, John Cena was wrestling Edge when Stevie Richards, Balls Mahoney, and Justin Credible came out to sit at ringside. After Edge fled the ring, Cena wiped out the ECW stars and claimed he would be on ECW the next night. The next night, Cena did get involved in an Edge-Rob Van Dam confrontation. After Edge fled the scene once again, Cena punched Paul Heyman in the face. I must have John Heyman. That'd be just as entertaining. An angry Heyman later proclaimed that ECW would invade Raw in retaliation, that he would be holding an Extreme Battle Royal to determine who would face Cena at Vengeance. Later in the night, Sabu won that Battle Royal to earn the match. On 6:19, Cena defeated Balls. In a cool touch, Mahoney was wielding a chair that read, "Cena must pay." After the bout, Sabu appeared and threw a chair at Cena's head. He then laid Cena across the announce table before putting him through it with a springboard leg drop off the top. The next night on ECW, Cena showed up and challenged Sabu to an Extreme Lumberjack match, and Sabu accepted. Kind of a dream match in some ways here with these two guys. Maybe not on Cena level, but just Sabu having a big main event WWE pay-per-view match, which is crazy. Been waiting, you know, a guy that had never really came, and here he was. Strong push, too. I mean, they clearly thought highly of him as a torchbearer for the new brand because he's one of the guys behind RVD being pushed the strongest. So we get the Lumberjacks and ECW Raw lining the ring, continuing the brand animosity. Raw Lumberjacks really showing a lack of legit depth on the roster. It was a very soft group that was out there. I think that 93 Lumberjack match, Scott had more talent
yes.
around it than
very much so.
What
yes.
we see here. Sabu jumps John Cena to start as he was caught up with the Lumberjacks. Pretty good atmosphere here as they trade blows until Cena hits a fisherman suplex for two. Sabu gets dumped to the floor and pounced on and fed back into the ring. Sabu makes a quick comeback and keeps tossing Cena to the floor where he gets assaulted, including Sandman, who bashes him with a cane. Back inside, Sabu hits a triple jump moonsault for two and then hooks on a camel clutch. Cena makes a brief comeback, but Sabu goes low to cut him down and hits a nice triple jump spinning leg drop for two. Sabu stalks Cena but whiffs on a springboard dive off a chair. The crowd boos as Cena hits a power slam, but a big fight breaks out on the floor with the Lumberjacks. Cena heads out and sends Stevie Richards into the crowd with an FU. Sabu follows and destroys Cena with a couple of gross chair shots. Sandman and Tommy Dreamer put Cena on a table, but Viscera, while people makes the save. Yeah, that was pretty funny, seeing him waddle yes. over there and save everyone. Cena meets Sabu with a kendo stick. Back inside, Cena throws a chair at Sabu and hits an FU out of the ring through a table into a nasty bump. Sabu lands really funny towards the edge of the table. Back inside, Cena gets an STFU for the win. This was a really fun, wild brawl. Cena took all of Sabu's signature spots. Sabu worked a focused match and a focused style. The Lumberjack gimmick was smart and helped jazz up the atmosphere. Cena, you know, probably should have pinned Sabu off the table spot. Didn't really need him to make him tap out clean as well. But whatever, it is what it is. Another resume builder for Cena. Sabu looked impressive. I'm perfectly fine with him jobbing here. I don't think Sabu needed this win. Cena, you can't have him losing to Sabu. You just can't. And Sabu will be fine. So I thought it was a really good match. I think just Sabu getting this rub and being in this spot at this point of his career like was enough to show that they believed in him. He didn't need to win the match. What do you think, Glenn?
I totally agree. This was another way to kind of reestablish Cena after losing the title. It's just so natural to say winning. It's another way to establish Cena again. It's an extension of his kind of feud with ECW in the abstract. And it is a really high position for Sabu. I was looking forward to this at the time in 06. I was also looking forward to it watching it again for this show because we talked about their match at the head-to-head show a few weeks ago, which got pretty good down the stretch. This one had a different dynamic because of the Lumberjacks, and also it felt kind of short, but with the things that they did in the match, it makes sense that it's short. You know, they're trading sequences until the fight breaks out amongst the Lumberjacks, and then everything kind of falls apart. This is pretty much the only way in life that we're going to be able to see Al Snow beat up John Cena, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing you get with a Lumberjack match. Even when it the people playing the Lumberjacks are a little low card. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's Cena goes out
kind.
To
beat. Yes.
Yeah, Cena goes out to beat up the Lumberjacks, and he FUs Stevie Richards.
That was great. He just shocked him into the crowd.
And then when everything really starts breaking out, you know, Viscera saves Cena from Tommy Dreamer, and then Snitsky kicks Sandman. Just the yes. combinations of guys are so off the wall.
Yes.
You know,
Viscera making the save made me laugh so hard. It was like, of all people, yeah. like big baby face hero.
Billowy pajamas comes on the screen.
Yeah, seriously. And then after the match, Cena celebrates in the ring with all his great friends from Raw. Matt Stryker, Cade, Murdoch, Val Venis.
Brand superiority, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, Sabu is being hauled away by C.W. Anderson and Nunzio.
Awesome. It was so great.
You know, just all the combination guys are so weird. Cena and Sabu continue to have this like weird chemistry too.
Yeah, they do.
I really liked the dynamic. I liked the dynamic they were working with, where Sabu kept throwing all the hardcore stuff at him. He did the Arabian Facebuster. He hit him with the chair a couple other different ways. He, you know, did all of his springboard flips and stuff. And Cena was just kind of lasting through it, surviving it, until he gave in and started doing some of it too, where he grabbed Sandman's cane and cracked Sabu and then put him through the table and then brought him back in the ring for the win. So I liked that story they were telling there.
Mm. I think the funniest one for me was Cena getting roughed up by Amish Roadkill.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, close you'll ever get to a main event, pal. Live, pal.
I mean, you can read into Cena defeating this, you know, one of the bigger guys from ECW, at least one of, as they're presenting it. But at the same time, they did keep the title on RVD earlier in the show, so it's not like they're burying ECW, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you about the Sabu thing, JR, in the sense that I'm a little surprised he had a tap out. I mean, do we really have to go that far? I mean,
Yeah, it's one of those things where it doesn't really hurt him. But it's like, didn't really have to, you know?
No, they really didn't have
the
to.
The nasty FU through the table where he lands on the very edge and, like, almost breaks his back. Like,
yeah.
Like, to me, that's, you know, that's kind of enough. Like, you know.
Yeah, that is enough.
You don't really need to have a tap as
Yeah,
well.
Right. But losing would meant no, that's not a big deal. Cena needed it more anyway. Were they really weird, you know, wonky on time on this show that this match only had to be, like, barely 7 minutes? I'm kind of surprised. That's all. It doesn't hurt the match any, but I was expecting at least maybe another 3 minutes or so for it being a Cena kind of co-main event match. So I was a little surprised at the length. I thought it would be a longer match. And you know, it's a decent enough feud for Cena. You know, Sabu's not a guy to shake a stick at. I mean, he's.
I don't think you want to go much longer than this. I mean, with Sabu, like in 2006, you know what I mean? As focused as he was, like, I mean, I'll give it to him. Like, he, you know, he came focused. He was ready to go. Like, he didn't, you know, he wasn't all over the place. He was, you could tell he wanted to make this one count. So, you know, good for him.
Right.
I think 8 minutes is enough. Like, you know, empty the tank in a very quick manner. You get the gimmicks on the outside. You get Sabu flying around. You get, you know, let Cena take all his spots. That was the thing you wanted to see. So that's it. Unload it. Out there, unload everything and move on. Like, don't. This is one where you don't want to overstay your welcome.
True, true. And Glenn, of course, was begging for that face to face between Viscera and Amish Roadkill. Tremendous main event match right there. And this is a good. This is a great feud for Cena. Kind of a time killer. Eventually, you know, he's going to eventually get back into the title picture. So, but a good match to put him in to highlight him as just a guy going to war. And I really do think that Cena's, as I'm watching this again, I do feel like Cena's reputation grew a little bit. I gained a lot more respect for him than probably most people did in 06, and he'd probably get a lot more crap later in 06. But I thought this whole, all of the intertwining with ECW, I think has helped him, not hurt. I think it's helped him more than hurt ECW.
Right.
I think it's given him some more cred that I don't think he would have had otherwise.
So. No, I agree. It was cool seeing him mix it up with these guys, especially during those weeks on TV up to the pay-per-view where he was, you know, fighting balls and all these guys. You know, like, that was too. It was cool to see him go into enemy territory. And I do think it was a nice way to keep him busy out of the title picture for a little bit. Let RVD breathe a bit. I do think, as much as Cena is still your bigger draw, if you were hell-bent on having the main event be the main event. I think they could have at least put this where RVD Edge was and put RVD Edge here. That's probably the one tweak I would have made.
Yeah, that would
show
work.
That RVD's the pecking order above. I mean, above Cena a little bit for now. You know, even though we know he's not.
Yeah, you could definitely do that, and that would give you the story as well that Cena beats Sabu, and then ECW kind of has to rebound, and they really need RVD to pull it out in the title match.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, good way to put it. I agree with that. That works perfectly.
I think that at least adds a little balance. I mean, I get, you know, as bad as it is, I get why they did what they did. I mean, you know, the reunion is a big, you know, at the time was a pretty big deal. So it's fine if you absolutely have to end with that. But again, to me, I would at least flip these matches. There was no need for this one to have to be after.
Right.
The title match.
I agree. So John Cena gets the win. Again, match a little under 7 minutes, and we move on. Speaking of Cena and speaking of RVD, JR, they have a little face-to-face backstage.
A little tete-a-tete. RVD confronts Cena backstage to express his respect for Cena's balls, but says he's the champion. He isn't just keeping the belt warm, and then challenges Cena to a title match on Raw.
Yes. So he pretty much grants Cena his rematch from losing at One Night Stand. A lot of testicle talking and testicle grabbing, as we saw in the Flair Foley match. All right, time for the main event.
Play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
What?
Yacht Rock in there.
There's a bunch of Yacht Rock in there. Now Brad's probably having nightmares of all those shelves of Elmos singing this long 9-minute vignette, but
whatever.
Yacht Rock in it, baby.
On 5-1. Okay.
No, I was going to say, I heard Captain Antonio. All right.
Did you?
Today, yes. About 5:20.
On 5-1, Vince McMahon decided to take the night off and left the Spirit Squad in charge of the show. They announced that Kenny would take on John Cena later that night. Before he left, McMahon told Triple H he had to be the special referee or he'd receive no more title bouts. Like, that's a thing for him. Like, oh, you get so many title bouts. No more, though, if you do this. You know, it's like a fucking box of cookies for him. No more title matches, buddy. During this match, so rare for everyone else, where I missed this stipulation. During this match, Triple H got into it with the squad, wiped out Mitch, and then left. As he left, Shawn Michaels came down to take over as ref, as the show ended with Cena and Michaels taking out the squad. The next week, Triple H requested a title match, and Cena accepted the challenge. Why not? McMahon then came out and said the match would not happen, and Hunter would have to get his title match at a later date. He said Michaels and Cena would instead team up and face the Spirit Squad. The squad won the match. After Kenny used the belt, they would assault Cena and Michaels after the bout until Triple H came down as well. Cena recovered and wiped out the squad, but Hunter dropped Cena with a pedigree. On 5:15, Michaels was wrestling Kenny when Shane McMahon got involved and took out Shawn. Triple H came down and Shane commanded him to hit Shawn with a sledgehammer. Michaels ducked, and Hunter paced a chain before walking off. Vince came out to check on his son and glared at Hunter, who mouthed that it was only an accident. The next week, Vince demanded a public apology for Triple H and warned of retaliation if it wasn't delivered. Later in the night, Hunter apologized, but Vince said he would only accept if Hunter attacked Michaels later in the night. In that night's main event, Michaels was forced to face the Spirit Squad. During the match, Vince called down Hunter, who stood with a sledgehammer. Kenny pulled it away from him, saying he'd do the job. And Scott Criscolo said, "I'll do the job." But Hunter took him out and then wiped out the rest of the squad and ended the show in a stare down with Vince. On 529, Hunter defeated Kenny and then again beat down the squad. Vince then announced that Hunter would join the Kiss My Ass Club the following week. 7 days later, Triple H told Vince he wasn't kissing anyone's ass. So Vince told him if he couldn't beat Big Show, he would get out of the kissing. Unfortunately for Hunter, Show won by DQ, and the squad jumped Show less than a minute into the match. Vince told Hunter if he didn't kiss his ass, he wouldn't be receiving any more title matches.
No more bouts.
No more matches for you, son. Hunter then had a chat with Shane backstage, where Hunter was drinking water while Shane told him to just go through with it. After the end of the show, Hunter came out to the ring, but he was moving very slowly and slurring his words. Scott Criscolo sat twiddling his fingers patiently. Then, before anything else could happen, he passed out, clearly having been drugged backstage by Shane. Vince then pulled out his pants. This is like Scott Criscolo fanfic 2006. Right? Vince pulled down his pants, but things turned when Shane passed out, and Hunter popped up and dropped Vince with a pedigree subterfuge. On 6/12, Vince forced Hunter to face a squad in a gauntlet match. As the match went on, Vince called out Mitch to enter next. However, instead of running out, he came flying out to the stage, courtesy of the returning Shawn Michaels. Shawn joined Hunter in the ring, beat down the Spirit Squad, and celebrated by chopping their crotches to McMahon. Finally, the next week saw the return of the DX antics, only unlike 9 years ago, were quite edgy or funny, but rather childish and lame, including roosters, penis pumps, and male strippers. As the fun rolled along, Shane found Vince and told him Stephanie was in labor and they had to leave, leaving Jonathan Coachman in charge of Raw. Later that night, DX showed up and vandalized the McMahon office, put Coach's head through a wall, pulled down his pants, and spray-painted his ass. At the end of the show, they now officially reunited DX, made it official by bursting out their old catchphrase and hamming it up in the ring. Announced Stephanie wasn't in labor and brought out a midget version of the Spirit Squad, followed by female cheerleaders. Mikey and Johnny tried to attack DX, but got laid out, and the midgets all mooned the rest of the Spirit Squad to end the show. So, in the spirit of me catching my breath and having a drink, before we get to the match, Glenn Butler, tell us about your thoughts on the return of D-Generation X in 2006.
Oof. I think to an extent you have John Cena to thank for it. I think it's the feud that Triple H had with Cena, where everyone started cheering Triple H so hard that they had to turn him face afterward. It was frankly amazing to see happen in real time, because H had been a heel for so very long, and he had been defined by that for so very long, even if in real time it was only like a few years, but it felt like a defining part of his character. And for him to kind of be forced into this role off of the crowd reactions was deeply, deeply strange. You also got the impression that because of those reactions, Triple H had to turn face, and they had, given what was going on with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon, they would have to put them back together. I remember there was a lot of speculation around God at Backlash and the King of Kings from WrestleMania, especially about Triple H, you know, spitting his water and baptizing the front row and things like that. But you knew it was happening. You knew it had to happen. And so a lot of the speculation was about when and how exactly. And so every week these things would happen and it's, oh, they didn't do it yet. And oh, they didn't do it yet until they finally did it, which is okay. I mean, it's fine enough. It, like I said, it's a different thing for Triple H to be doing after his last run. But looking back on it now, a lot of the antics that they got up to were wrestling comedy, which is a special sort of comedy, which is often very stilted and awkward. The one thing they did that I really did like was the episode of Raw where they were imitating Vince and Shane which might have been after this. I don't remember exactly.
I think so. I think it's after this.
Okay, never mind then.
You can talk about it.
Well, I just think of all the people to do Vince impressions on TV, Triple H's was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And Shawn Michaels' impression of Shane was great, even going back to WrestleMania where he was mocking his little dance. So that part of it hit all right. A lot of the rest, like I mentioned before, with the cock and the penis pump is kind of stupid. Although coming at the point of the show that the first little scene with the penis pump did, it was like, it was almost as if Vince said, RVD's up next, I got time, and he went into the bathroom with the thing. You know? There you go. And now they're fighting the Spirit Squad, which is, you know, again, a group that's kind of stilted and awkward, and it's kind of an odd matchup.
I mean, Job Squad is probably what they should have renamed them. It was what bothered me about it was the DX in 97. I know they couldn't fully go back to that, but 06 has been edgy, man. Like, they could have, you know, it's not far from what they were doing in 98, 99, 97, everything. They just went backwards. Like, instead of being, you know, cutting edge and you know, exposing the business and being douchebags, they're just like being like high schoolers, and it was like really corny. Like, and for Hunter to come off this run of being this cerebral, brutalizing heel where he just beat the piss out of everyone and, you know, destroy them with sledgehammers, and now he's like a, you know, a joker just like peeing on people and making cock jokes. I don't know, it was just like so lame. Like, it was like the lowest humor. And I don't know, part of it was Sean feeling like he, you know, couldn't be the full-on dick that he was because of the religious stuff, but I don't know, some of the stuff they're doing here is crossing that line too. I don't know. It was really because they're faces and they're trying to, it was the whole point, so sell merch again, I guess. Was that a big part of it? I don't know. But it's just the comedy was so bad and so forced, and you got JR out there, you know, fake belly laughing at it all, and I hated it. Like, I hated it right away. I was for the reunion because I wanted Hunter to get the refreshing, like you mentioned, Glenn, like he was just played. But once it happened, I was like, oh, my God, this is, you know, the week to week was brutal. Like, if you just watch the pay-per-view stuff, like, it's, you know, maybe okay. But the week to week, I remember at the time, was just rough watching their antics. But Scott, we kind of built to it before. Big DX mark, big DX fan. What are your thoughts on the reunion and how it played out? And then we'll get to the match.
Well, the reunion was fantastic. I marked out for it. I'm not gonna lie. It was pretty cool. I didn't like the shirts though. They were a little, I didn't like them. The little like midgety guys with the weird hair. And Triple H actually came to the ring with the old school DX, which I did buy. They actually, I remember very vividly there being a deal, and I bought old school DX t-shirt. But, it was, I have to admit, it was a little uncomfortable watching 40-something-year-old guys doing, like, 22-year-old pranks. It just seemed...
That too.
...out of place.
And more like 15-year-old pranks.
Yeah, 22. I mean, it just... I mean, I don't know how non-edgy did they need to be. I mean, what if Sean goes back to his, you know, his church for his Tuesday night Bible sessions and one of his students go, well, what'd you do this week, Mr. Michaels? I don't know. I gave my boss a penis pump. It's like, I mean, how is that different than you know, wearing, you know, holding signs that said, who booked this crap? Or I'd rather be in China. I mean, you know, what's the difference? It's still a little, you know, it's still risque to begin with. It's just not cool risque. It's, you know, dopey risque. It didn't make any sense. It didn't. I was just them happy being DX and that's it. The antagonizing Vince with the goofy jokes and, you know, what's his name? Johnson, the fat stripper guy, whatever.
Big Dick Johnson.
Big Dick Johnson. I mean, that stuff was just... You guys said that in perfect stereo. That's right. It was just so stupid. It was dumb.
Hustle.
Loyalty.
Respect. It was bad. DX coming back, I thought was fine. Because it gets two guys out of the title picture, if you want to use that thinking. But the antics were just were too childish for two 40-something year old guys.
Huh. There you go, Big Dick Johnson theme song.
Well, yep, same music I hear at Matt Rotella's desk every day.
No, you're right though. That's a. that's a good point you made there too. At least it keeps them out of the title picture and lets them do other stuff. Unfortunately, that other stuff eats up like 80% of the TV.
Well, that's true too. Yeah,
you know, it's not like they were just kind of, you know, one segment and out. You know,
yeah,
they're all over the place. Doing yeah. shit that you can't do on television was doing in 1990 with kids, you know, like that. That's like your
yes.
big hook. It's
just, exactly. What a great show.
So soft the humor, and it yeah. doesn't end. It keeps going.
No, no, it doesn't end. Yeah, them coming back was fine. Good markout moment. I popped for it. But from that point forward, they could have gone a different path and been a little more mature with the way they were being handled, rather than, you know, 15-year-old toilet jokes and.
Also, say what you want about what DX has been doing since they reunited, but when they come out for this match, crowd perks up.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time in a while.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I think it's fine that it was last. You know, it's their first match. I mean, really, as a team since like the fall of 97, right? I mean, I know they had the T's in 02. But they hadn't really been on a team as DX in, you know, a decade. So to me, it's fine. The premise is dumb. The 5-on-2 completely emasculates your tag team champions and one of the biggest heel stables, you know, you've been pushing all year. Mm. That's kind of goofy. But I get why it's last, and the crowd definitely was into it. So let's talk about the match. So Hunter, of course, fully face now. Lots of juvenile humor. You know, again, crowd though fully into the DX rebirth on the surface. So. Spirit Squad, still Vince's crew, wrestling as a proxy. Big pop for the DX entrance, comes out to the full shtick, milks all the reactions. Spirit Squad does their over-the-top entrance as well with fire horks and air horns. So, I mean, to me, the build has been okay, like, at this point, the entrances, I should say. Michaels lights up Mitch to start, fucking with him a bit. Mitch makes an aggressive comeback, cracks Michaels over and over in the corner, and that ends quickly as Michaels comes back with chops and tags in Hunter as they mow down the whole Spirit Squad and dump them to the floor. Nasty spot here is Johnny gets a busted nose during a fracas, and he's just gushing blood as the Spirit Squad tries to regroup. And he actually comes in and spits the blood at Michaels, and then puts on a Karate Kid headband and does these crazy over-the-top karate poses. Michaels makes funny faces, tags in Hunter, who just watches him and then punches him in the nose. Johnny finally lands a kick to his charging Hunter to escape, but Mikey gets drilled and tossed outside. DX double teams Mikey outside as Spirit Squad yells at the ref. Spirit Squad gets an opening, jumps Hunter on the floor, shooting him into the steps. Things break down as Hunter makes a tag, and Michaels comes in and cleans them all out, hits a big elbow on Mikey. Spirit Squad cuts off a sweet chin music, and Johnny hits a spin kick to the face. The squad starts to quick tag, but Michaels keeps landing in shots to break up their offense. Michaels gets pushed to the outside and destroyed with an awful-sounding chair shot. A lot of nasty chair shots on this show. Back inside, Mikey hits a springboard bulldog off the trampoline for two. Spirit Squad goes for some quick covers and keeps tagging, double-teaming and striking. After a few minutes of a heat segment, Michaels gets a double DDT, tags in Hunter, who runs through everyone. The crowd's just, you know, been fine here for the most part. Not red hot like the word to open. Not dead, though. DX gets Kenny cornered, who walks into a pedigree as Michaels hits Nikki with sweet chin music, and they both cover to win. DX then mows down the rest of Spirit Squad. Vince comes out and stares them down. Very much a standard extended Saturday Night's Main Event type of match. Just a bunch of comedy to open, a very short heat segment, and then the big go-home finish to pop the crowd. And I will say this, I went to a house show at URI, Glenn, where we were for NXT, pretty much a week before this. It was like 9 days before, and this match literally was the main event, and it pretty much was like move for move, right down to the karate stuff, which made me realize that they ran poor Johnny out there with his broken nose to do this stupid karate thing that they had worked in all their matches probably beforehand. I thought this completely killed off any credibility the Spirit Squad had built up, which had been hard work to be cheerleaders and actually kind of gotten over, and then to get buried here, like, really demolishes them. The match was fine, but nothing to save the pay-per-view. You know, we talked about it late, you know, earlier. Should it have been the mid-card main event, close with RVD Edge? I think you at least get a better match. Again, I don't completely begrudge them for putting this last, but when you look at how the match played out, with no heat at all, I mean, it's basically a squash. A two-on-five squash. And the crowd was mild, and they didn't justify things either. Like, if they had been red hot and molten throughout the match, you could say, all right, you know, they made the right move. But they were hot for the entrance and the finish, and that was about it. So, I thought it was a soft ending to a soft show. What'd you think, Glenn?
I agree totally. there was no intrigue to this match at all. And I think if you're going to have a match with no intrigue, it needs to be more of a straightforward showcase.
Right.
It needs to be, it feels weird to say it, but a little more of a squash. You know, you have this match where you know the Spirit Squad are losing, like 100% know it. And you still have Michaels and H selling for a significant part of the match. So that just feels kind of useless.
Do you think they should have done a tag with two of the squad members?
That would have been an improvement. Definitely. And then you have all the others, you know, interfering anyway and make it a, you know, big old schmoz or something. I think in either event, I don't think it really fits in the main event. Even though for their entrance, it is like the most the crowd gets hyped up during the show. But I think it could have gone earlier in the show. You have more of a showcase, just a straightforward showcase for DX. And I think that makes the show, I think that makes the show flow a little better.
Agreed. What do you think, Scott?
I think the mentioning the predictability does take away from this main event. I mean, come on, they just reunited. Are they really going to lose this match? I mean, come on, seriously, this was booking nonsense. I understand. Yeah, they had to be last for the sense of, you know, it's DX, it's Sean and Hunter. But if you really wanted a main event with intrigue, I still think you could have put RVD Edge here, and I don't think there would have been any problems. I would not have put Cena Sabu last, particularly if it was only 7 minutes, but I definitely could have seen them do RVD Edge last. But
no, I totally agree, Scott. Cena Sabu would not have fit last. It's either your big re-debuting super team or the title.
Yes. And if you're not going to have this last, it's going to be in the middle. Like, I'm fine. I would have done, if you're going to keep this last, I would have at least switched RVD to the semi-main. But to me, if you're going to put RVD last, you can't put this right before. This has to kind of bridge the show in the midway point.
Yes. Now, this would have to go where RVD Edge actually went.
Right.
Yeah. But the childishness is just, it's rough. It's rough stuff. And it gets much, much worse. I just lost my place here. It was an underwhelming end to an underwhelming show. By the way, a little trivia. Glennie, can you remember Triple H's last babyface pay-per-view match?
Review. Huh. Backlash 02?
King of the Ring 02. That understinker with Undertaker.
Oh,
that
Lord.
28-minute debacle. Because remember, Vengeance was the whole possible DX reuniting, and then, of course, he turned heel the next night. But, yeah, the end of this is just underwhelming. It's a good DX pop, and, yeah, that's nice. But from a show perspective, it really limped to the finish. So there you go. DX wins. And Spirit Squad, which was pretty hot for the last couple months, begin a job run of a honky tonk mannish proportions, starting with this show. They're pretty much cooked by like September.
And they're still champions.
And they're still champions as they pass the belt around amongst five guys.
Right, that's the thing too. Like I said, you've worked so hard to build them up as legitimate, and then you just, I don't know. There had to be a better way to go about this than what they did. Because it's not even entertaining. It's just the whole thing is just a bad taste. And it's fine that they're, you know, had to get it out of the system, let them reunite here, get a win, and then move on to bigger things. But I guess we'll track it. I don't think it gets much better, but we'll see.
No.
It can't be much worse than the way it started.
No. So so there you go. There is Vengeance 2006. Not better than Vengeance 2005, which was a absolutely fantastic show. Glennie, thoughts overall, top to bottom on this one?
Well, just like I said when we were going to the break, it's a very herky-jerky up-and-down show. Cena Sabu, I still think, was pretty fun for what it was. I'm not sure there are enough bright spots to really save it. I think as a whole 3-hour watching experience, it's not great, to be charitable.
No. I mean, not great at all.
Nope.
I mean, probably the worst we've seen so far this year, Scott. I feel like Backlash.
Worse than the Rumble?
Ugh, God, Rumble is so fucking bad.
That
might be better than the Rumble. Which is crazy to show you how bad that Rumble match was. Yeah. Because usually the Rumble match really salvages it. Yeah, I think Carlito, Nitro, Shelton was right better than anything by far in the Rumble. So, okay, maybe definitely. Next to the worst. I mean, that was one of the best matches we've seen so far. It's hard to count the ECW stuff, but...
right.
And even RVD Edge wasn't too bad, but top to bottom, not good. Because you don't even have the stuff that the SmackDown shows has had as filler, like the, you know, Finley Regal or the Benoit Regal. You know, like that stuff that they've thrown out on SmackDown. Those
potato poundings, yeah.
Right, to at least fill some time. Instead, we've just had, the filler here just wasn't that great. So, yeah, I mean, probably a bottom two show that we've seen this year. So since Mania, though, is there anything on here, the best match you think we've seen? Or I guess starting with Backlash.
Triple threat.
Yeah, it's up there. I think the...
RVD Edge?
No. The top two still have to be Cena, RVD, and the tag at One Night Stand. Or probably our top two that we've seen. The three-way at Backlash is really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there another one in there?
Shelton,
RVD or something.
Let me check.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Let me check the
Not
document.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, wait a minute. We have to check the document. I didn't think there was anything at.
Well, we had
Judgment Day.
Yeah, wasn't that? Was that Benoit Regal or I mean Benoit? Finley?
Oh, Benoit Finley.
Or was it Finley Regal?
Two best matches we had. I got to update the document. Going into One Night Stand, the two best matches we had were Benoit Finley from Judgment Day and the three way from Backlash.
Yeah, I think the two at One Night Stand are above those two, and this one. I'd probably put this one fourth. I think it's better than the main event of Backlash, but I think I liked Benoit Finley better. Would you agree with that, Glenn, from what you've seen?
I haven't seen it in a few years, but that Benoit Finley match was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely have that up there, and I might have it like in the mix with those two matches from One Night Stand.
Yeah.
Worst match still Kane Big Show from Backlash?
Yeah, I think it's worse than Kane and Fake Kane.
Yeah.
They're close. They're neck and neck.
Yeah, Glenn, that Kane Big Show from Backlash is I mean, it's putrid.
They're close. Pretty putrid. They're about even.
Poor Kane. All right.
That's an unpopular sentiment. Poor Kane.
Poor Kane.
I think this one was poor him, yeah. Not his fault on this one. All right, that'll do it.
Yep.
So we're back, Scott, next week. Glenn, you'll be back. I guess back again, right?
This one you're planned.
As we'll look at Live Watch for Saturday Night's main event from July of 2006. So we'll check that out. We have, I think, Greg Phillips is with us and Steve Riddle. So different crew, but Glenn will be here holding the fort down for the veterans.
Yep.
All right.
So that should be fun. And then probably 2 weeks after that will be Great American Bash 06. That'll be the 4th July week. So in there somewhere. Be sure you tune in Wednesday night for the premiere episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. That's me, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey taking you around the world of professional wrestling. WWE, Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, Impact. We'll cover it all. So be sure to check that out. It'll drop Wednesday night or Thursday morning, somewhere in there. Check out all the other podcasts as well. Subscribe to all the feeds like we mentioned. It is good to be back in the Vintage Vault as always. Scott, it was good to have you here as always.
Yes.
Of course, back in the saddle.
Thank you.
Glenn.
Awesome show.
Glad you could break your cherries. Vintage Vault.
Ooh.
Busted it wide open. There was a lot of blood on the show. But anyway.
All over the mat.
God.
No Coumadin will stop you then, even. anyway, it was good to have you here for your maiden Vintage Vault appearance. So, all these years, here you are.
I'm so glad to bring the hustle.
Yes, the loyalty.
And the respect.
All right, that'll do it. Clotheslines and Headlines, check it out. Check out everything else. And then we'll be back next week, Saturday Night's main event. Take care.
You're going to have to fix the lock now, Glenn.
the Coumadin Extreme Podcast.
You're a big man. I'll treat you like you're a little man. Don't tell me what it's like to be half a man. It must break your heart to see what I am. But that's a freak, boy. Yeah, that's a freak, little man. Break it down. Tell me what to do. You know who you're talking to.